One thing that needs to be made known is that the government is stealing the cattle. The government is not removing the cattle from federal lands and putting it back on the ranchers' lands. And we're talking about huge amounts of lands here. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of acres. The government is taking the cattle that he has put on federal land and selling the cattle at auction. Problem number one, theft. Problem number two is the so-called First Amendment zones. The government will not permit locals who object to this show of force, who object to this draconian order of a court, this draconian manner of enforcing a court order, to stand there and protest it. They're requiring the protesters to stay 3 miles away from the area of the confrontation. Now, the last time I checked, my dear Stuart, the First Amendment zone in this country was the entire United States of America,
yeah,
not some webbed-off area that the feds have designated.
Why have they done this? I mean, do they really need that kind of show of force? I mean, look, I'm going to compare and contrast with what's happening in Washington, D.C. today, right where you are. We can't get Lois Lerner to answer questions about what she did to intimidate the political opponents of President Obama. Can't get her to answer the question. But we can send helicopters, armed guys, FBI people who steal cattle. I mean, I think things are out of whack here, Judge.
It's certainly an inappropriate use of resources. There certainly is a more peaceful way to resolve this. The government's argument is this guy has had his cattle on federal lands for generations. We won 2 lawsuits against him. He refuses to obey court orders. The guy's argument is my family has been using these lands since the 1800s. They don't belong to the federal government. They've never belonged to the federal government. They belong to the state of Utah. The state of Utah says I can use them. That's the standoff. For the federal government to use force, to taser people, to use helicopters, to steal cattle, and to prevent people from legitimately protesting here is reprehensible. It's an inappropriate use of federal...
The Democrats are very concerned about courts holding this administration accountable for their lawlessness, and in particular the D.C. Circuit. The D.C. Circuit is where a great many of these lawless actions are challenged. And this was all about wanting to pack the D.C. Circuit with judges that President Obama and the Democrats think will rubber stamp the president's lawlessness. You know, one of the things that's striking, there have been Republican presidents, unfortunately, who've overreached, who've exceeded their executive authority. And when they've done that, there have been Republicans who stand up and call the Republican president to account, say the Constitution matters and no president, no man is above the law. One of the things that I've found most disappointing, where are the Democrats? Where are the liberals? Where are the journalists and the media calling President Obama to account for disregard?
Why your department can provide documents to terrorist lawyers and many of them to 4 out of 8 of the terrorists and not provide them to members of Congress. All I'm asking again is, could we please get the documents that have been put on disk that of the 9,600 summaries of transcripts and the documents that were produced to the terrorists, and not some link, but documents that you made available, your department made available to the terrorists? I renew my request.
Well, I think what we promised to do is to provide you and your staff with...
Sir, I've read you what your department promised, and it is inadequate, and I realize that contempt is not a big deal to our Attorney General, but it is important that we have proper oversight.
You don't want to go there, buddy.
So,
you don't want to go there, okay?
I don't want to go there?
No.
About the contempt?
You should not assume that that is not a big deal to me. I think that it was inappropriate. I think it was unjust. But never think that that was not a big deal to me. Don't ever think that.
Well, I'm just looking for evidence, and normally we're known by our fruits, and there have been no indications that it was a big deal because your department has still not been forthcoming in producing the documents that were the subject of the contempt.
Now,
let me move on. There have been other questions asked about
the documents that we were prepared to make available then, we're prepared to make available now, that would have obviated the whole need. This was all about the gun lobby and a desire to have a...
So we've been trying to get to the bottom of Fast and Furious, where people died, where at least a couple hundred Mexicans died, and we can't get the information to get to the bottom of that. So I don't need lectures from you about contempt.
And I don't need lectures from you either.
Because it is very difficult to deal with asking questions. As a former judge, I'd never have asked questions of someone who's been held in contempt.
Because
we waited till the contempt
the Senate
was
is protected. Otherwise, we just start defunding the areas of the Justice Department that are not providing the documents that they should provide. We don't affect law enforcement, but this is what Congress is supposed to do in order to have proper oversight. But he was found in contempt by the entire House of Representatives. He would have been brought to responsibility for it, except that once Congress finds someone in contempt, then it goes to the U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia, who works for Eric Holder, and surprisingly, shock, he hasn't done anything.
But if
yet.
The Senate goes Republican, it might be a different story.
It very well could be. Then
right.
We may start getting some responses from the Attorney General's office, DOJ, as we should.
Right. And Carson, real quick, it's personal between you guys, obviously. It seems like you've disdained each other.
Well, it's not personal with me. He seems like a likable guy, but he is the highest law enforcement officer in the country, and he is obviously choosing, making personal choices rather than objective choices on who he prosecutes and persecutes and who he doesn't. So personal, it's a matter of proper oversight, and
right.
I don't think he's doing his job, otherwise he would produce
that.
The documents.
You look at the way, and forget about me. You look at the way the Attorney General of the United States was treated yesterday by a House committee. It had nothing to do with me. Forget that. What Attorney General has ever had to deal with that kind of treatment? What president has ever had to deal with that kind of treatment?
Urge this body to trust the Republicans. Let me be clear, I don't trust the Republicans. And I don't trust the Democrats. And I think a whole lot of Americans, likewise, don't trust the Republicans and the Democrats because it is leadership in both parties that has...
The Buchanan Brigades were sort of Tea Party people. They were rebelling against what they saw as the establishment of both political parties that had walked America into this terrible situation, had both conducted themselves badly, and neither had the answer. And that's what this Tea Party movement is like today, but it's much larger. It's people in both parties, and especially independents, and they have no confidence in the government of the United States. No confidence in Wall Street.
At the heart of my philosophy is much more libertarianism than Well, that's the fashionable word these days, I guess. A conservative is no longer just that. He's a libertarian.
Well, always has been. Because how do we call a liberal? You know, someone very profoundly once said many years ago that if fascism ever comes to America, it'll come in the name of liberalism. And what is fascism? Fascism is private ownership, private enterprise, but total government control and regulation. Well, isn't this the liberal philosophy? The conservative, so-called, is the one that says, less government, get off my back, get out of my pocket, and let me have more control of my own.
This is how we're going to help you and your family. It's something that speaks to the middle class and to the poor in America, that helps us as a party to shed the label that has been designed for us by those on the left, the sort of caricatured label that says we're somehow the party of the top 1%. And these things simply aren't true. We're conservative, not in spite of our compassion. We are conservative because we are compassionate. And that's really the tone that we're trying to strike, Will.
Senator Lee, I know you've got to go back to a vote in just a minute. So quickly, before we let you run, what do you think, honestly, was the single most constructive thing to come out of this CPAC? Of all the speeches, of all the rallies, of everything that happened there, was it a sense of unity? Was it a sense of purity? What was the lesson that people should have, the takeaway that people should have from this most recent CPAC?
Well, I think you had countless quotations of and references to Ronald Reagan. And a lot of those related in one way or another to Ronald Reagan's famous comment that we need to use bold colors rather than pastels. We do need to show contrast as a party. We need to show a clear distinction between conservative ideology and progressive thought, which has taken hold in Washington over the last 75 years or so. When we use bold colors and avoid the pastels, that's how we win elections. That's also how we change the government in a way that's going to benefit the poor.
And he made this very striking point that from 1940 to 2007, welfare spending grew at an average annual rate of just over 4%. And this is while income is growing at about 2.4%. The point is that for almost seven decades, year in, year out, under presidents of both parties, under congresses of both parties, the federal welfare leviathan has continued to grow and grow and grow. Ronald Reagan held back the growth in spending, but even he wasn't able to cut it. Why? What's the political dynamic?
Well, even welfare reform affected maybe four programs out of 70 or 80 programs, so it wasn't complete enough. I put it in more personal terms, and I think this is something that can appeal to people across both parties and independents as well, is that if you look like me and you hop out of your truck, you ought to be working. And I think most people believe that. We're now registering, though, more people as disabled than we are employing people, and that's a real problem. But it's a gradual problem. Republicans and Democrats have been complicit in this, but it's growing, 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 and people worry that such a great deal of dependency will ultimately drag us down as a country. And that's where the burden of debt comes in, and I think there really is a burden. But our message is a more difficult one. We need to explain to those who are working class and trying to get ahead that this burden of big government, that all of this stuff that government's offering you really has unintended consequences of dragging the economy down, dragging job standard cookie-cutter Republicans been. So I am offering something's different. And the libertarian twist of that, I think, has appealed to both ethnic minorities as well as the youth, as well as independents. It's really a message that gets beyond our hardcore Republican. But it's not antithetical to what hardcore Republicans stand for. But it is enough of a twist that I think it has a chance to resonate in areas where we have not done very well.
It's the only way to be.
As the federal government engages in yet another police state action to illegitimately seize land to which it has no constitutional claim, the world is reacting to its unnecessary foreign interventions and monetary manipulations. Liberty at home is threatened by a failing monetary scheme backed by the military might of a pseudo-empire. An overextended paternalistic welfare state resorts to draconian police state tyranny directed against those who eschew its diabolical grip. while purchasing the loyalty of some citizens over those who resist. The welfare warfare state is necessarily tyrannical towards those who threaten the expansion of the administrative bureaucracy, while lulling the cooperators into a soft despotism. Liberty is crushed violently in those who resist and willingly in those who comply. The Democrats seek to incorporate all into the administrative state, either as ruling oligarchs, complicit agents, or servile subjects. And the Republicans seek to do the same thing, albeit more efficiently. This engenders a reflexive reaction from libertarians, which unfortunately tends towards anarchy. Authentic American conservatism seeks a balance between totalitarian tyranny and anarchic dissolution, resulting in atomization of the individual, the degradation of society, and the death of liberty. This threatens the left and the right, the Democrats and the Republicans, as well as the libertine hedonists and statist dullards. Shall we have ruin, revolt, or reform? For liberty to thrive, we need civil society to empower mediating institutions and local communities, curtail the expansive administrative state to its enumerated powers, and promote the rights to individual liberty balanced by civic duty. Conservatives are assailed by totalitarian statists on the left and anti-statists on the right, both of which will destroy liberty. While conservatives and libertarians have many differences within themselves and within each other, we have far more in common. Yet there are many within our ranks who sow discord and disunity to empower the enemies of true liberty. While will we be dragged down the road to serfdom, willingly embracing our own demise, or stand in the breach and restore ordered liberty in a free and virtuous society? At core, this is an anthropological issue. Who is man? What is his end? How should we conduct ourselves? This exceptional confederated republic was founded on great principles of classical liberalism, but unfortunately it carried a strain of radical liberalism as well. This inevitable drift towards soft despotism was sowed from the start. Adams said the Constitution is for a moral and religious people, which meant, in C.S. Lewis's words, mere Christianity and or the natural law. The freedom afforded by the Constitution demands cultural restraint based on timeless moral principles, Christian in nature, although one need not necessarily be a Christian to accept its moral philosophy. Without the moral grounding of our culture, the Constitution of 1789 drifts towards the French spirit of that same year, albeit more slowly and less convulsively. Many libertarians get this. The vocal ones don't. Libertarianism, with a small L, not the Libertarian Party, that's the word we use for classical liberalism, which is an odd word, and it was made necessary because FDR appropriated the word liberal to obfuscate the fascistic progressive agenda, so-called. For that matter, Republican progressives have appropriated the word conservative. Nevertheless, there is an authentic American conservatism, whether it's paleocon, constitutional con, liberty con, Christian con, or whatever. Its principles are clear, but it isn't a rigid ideology. Rather, it is a set of principles by which conservatives view themselves and the world, and it has a profound political context and a rich intellectual history with significant practical applications. Liberalism, properly understood, is greatly desired in government, but it is very dangerous in society and culture. This maximal freedom will lead to atomized individualism concomitant with totalitarian collectivism, in which the state is everything and everything is the state. These are two violent extremes which both lead to dissolution and loss of liberty. The proper balance is maximal freedom through a limited government and optimal order through a morally restrained culture. The former is only possible with a confederation of united and sovereign free states and semi-autonomous municipalities. We use federalism to express that. The latter is only possible through interdependent communities comprised of self-restrained individuals. Are we Americans or are we neo-Frenchy radical Jacobins? Choose wisely. Speaking of French, in the second volume of Democracy in America, Alexis de Tocqueville said, "Over these citizens is elevated an immense tutelary power, which takes sole charge of assuring their enjoyment and of watching over their fate. It is absolute, attentive to detail, regular, provident, and gentle. It works willingly for their happiness, but it wishes to be the only agent and the sole arbiter of their happiness. It provides for their security, foresees and supplies their needs, guides them in their principal affairs, directs their testaments, divides their inheritances. In this fashion, every day, it renders the employment of free will less useful and more rare. It confines the action of the will within a smaller sphere, and bit by bit, it steals from each citizen the use of that which is his own. Equality has prepared men for all these things. It has disposed them to put up with them, and often even to regard them as a benefit. You have a choice. Work hard now to further liberty by having real conservatives and conservative libertarians take over the GOP, or watch the statists in both parties push their corporatist agenda to their benefit and our demise. Now is the last chance to stop those who want to fundamentally transform our republic into an empire abroad and a surveillance state at home. End the destruction of our economy by the Republican-Democrat duopoly and their Keynesian masters at the Federal Reserve by standing with the real conservatives. To defeat the lawless hordes of cultural Marxists, statists, collectivists, oligarchs, useful idiots, and their fellow travelers, especially the Democrat socialists, first you must crush the rhinos for liberty. You are live on Liberty's Thunder with Rex and Trog, irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Rex Watch Your Mouth, broadcasting to you from the Imperial City. Doctor?
Doctor, I'm your co-host, Trog. Luddite, and that ain't French, that's a caveman. That was a great segment, and that was a great read. I can't remember everything. I can't remember 5 minutes past, so as I was listening, I heard all kinds of things I want to comment on, and then as you're reading, I have all kinds of things I want to comment on, but here I am. You know, I'm old and feeble. I'm a caveman. I have short memory, you know, it's that Neanderthal syndrome. Something rang in my mind, and there was two things. One was socialism is great until you run out of other people's money. Well, we ran out of other people's money a long time ago. This country has been running on a shoestring, you know, pseudo economy for a long time, which if it wasn't tied to the U.S. petro trade dollar around the world, we never would have been able to print or sustain the debt that we have. And unfortunately, nobody pays attention to that. Now, you and I do because we study that stuff and we're interested in it. But we're up the crick. There ain't no more money. There's no more discounts they can give, you know, at the Fed because they run it basically zero anyway. They're giving away money for no cost, buying up all the bonds. Buying up the bonds that China and Russia are dumping, we'll be at over $5 trillion on their balance sheet. They're in debt 80 to 1 right now. It's a mess. So, that part about running out of other people's money, it's over. So we just haven't felt the pain yet because they keep printing, i.e. now $65 billion a month, was $85 billion, but basically, you know, just $1 trillion a year right through Obama's, you know, first five years, and nothing has been able to correct itself because of this collision between inflation and deflation that, you know, what's his name talks about. But the other thing that was ringing in my mind, and I've watched this my whole life, this whole, you know, welfare state, and I don't mean just people on welfare, and I don't mean they're bad people, but I mean an actual government decision to enslave people to government programs. You heard what Rand Paul said on that clip that, you know, that was it's really nice. You know, Reagan got like adjusted like 4 out of 70 programs. Well, that was in the 80s. It's a lot more now. And so what happens is you get a couple, three generations of people that can't equate work to money, and you got a problem. Well, and it's a problem when it's, you know, 2% of the population. It's a bigger problem when it's 15, 20, 30% of the population. And Rand was talking about it on his clip about, you know, they unemployment running out, and so they're all signed up for disability. I mean, they just go from one program to the next program to the next. And so we've got, you know, 20, 30, 40% of this population, 50% of the population to some degree or another, cannot survive without a federal program or a state program, which is still federal dollars. And so we're in a mess. And the part that rings in my mind so much about this was when the USSR fell back in 91, they said that one of the greatest, and actually it happened when the, you know, tear down this wall, Reagan era with East Germany, because they were just a total socialist state. The government owned and controlled all acts of trade, business, whatever. And so people were just work units. You know, they made no decisions in their lives except fear. They had that decision to make. But when the USSR fell and other countries who've been under totalitarian type rule, the biggest fear was how many generations would it take before those people were productive in a free enterprise society? That's a big one, Rex, because we have done to America, to a big chunk of this society, what we feared was going to be the cause and effect of spilling out of communism, you know, with 180 million people in Russia and other, you know, Soviet satellite states. So it was actually more than that, because I think they were over 400 million people in their whole empire. So we got a problem. And here's the challenge. Nobody is talking about it. Now, we do, and a handful of people that we follow or study or whatever or refer to talk about it. But as far as U.S. politicians go, they avoid it like the plague. So, you know, because Republicans are afraid to talk about, well, there's two reasons. Republicans don't want to talk about it because they're not interested in fixing it, because it's that welfare, warfare state, you know, and that world order mindset, you know, keeping people down. And Democrats don't want to talk about it because it's their programs. You know, they put them in place and they, you know, and keep jacking them up and pushing them as far as they can. So we have a whole corrupt system that is beyond just the federal government. It's in our states, it's in your county, it's in your city, and nobody knows what to do, and everybody's fighting to keep it because those are voters. And that's the sad part, because, I mean, we could use a spiritual revival in this country. But again, if everybody wanted to get up and all of a sudden, you know, they all got struck by God and said, I want to go to work and be a productive citizen, there ain't no damn jobs. So now you have another problem. We have a stalled economy. Now, if you listen to some economists, they say we've been in a depression. This is no recession. There is no recovery. It is a depression, and the only reason you don't see it or feel it is you don't see people standing in food lines at the soup kitchen because they all get an EBT card. And that's something that my son had brought up, you know, back in whatever conversation on one of the shows. So here we are in this insane mess, and it seems like it doesn't matter what we do, that, you know, they want to get us in more wars And I just heard, was reading an article that the new head of NATO wants $990 billion to build up the military. And I'm like going, who in the hell has got $990 billion? You know, I mean, are we just going to print more and throw it on top of it? It's like we're racing as fast as we can for the biggest cliff that we can find. That's just about how insane it is right now. And honestly, I can't think of a half a dozen guys in Congress that even talk about it or willing to address it or hint that it's a problem. And everybody else is just acting like we're not even going to touch this with the 10-foot pole. And that's sad, because it's not going to self-correct. It wasn't going to self-correct in the 80s. It took Reagan fighting with a bunch of neocon, you know, rhino liberal group back then just to get a few things done. And it took Newt in the 90s, you know, a battle of all battles just to get 8, 9, 10 items done. And so here we are, you know, 15, 20 years later, and it's just accelerated. So it's not going to go away. And I don't know what it's going to take to wake people up. I mean, it's like, you know, you and I went through the whole primary, you know, day by day, you know, radio shows, blogging, whatever. And then you kind of, okay, Romney lost. That's what he wanted to do anyway. And so now we got to start gearing up for 2012. But now that 2014 is here, I'm hearing the same crap come out of everybody's mouth. I feel like I'm right back in 2012. And maybe that was the Freudian slip. I said 2012. I just don't see it. I don't hear it. All I hear is rhinos and neocons, neocons trying to start a war with Russia, rhinos acting like there isn't a problem and they'll fix it if we give them the Senate, which you know they won't. You know, then they'll tell us we need the presidency, and then the president will get in there, and then if you have a House and Senate with Republicans running it, then they can go back to the Bush era and, you know, continue with the Rhino plan, which is two notches below the Democrat plan in terms of expenses and avoidance across the land. So, you know, we need a liberty movement, and we needed one a long time ago, but they won't allow it to happen. And we know that if Rand Paul is looking like he's going to win the primary, Sheldon, you know, the great gambler, is going to spend $100 million to defeat him. I mean, you know, when you hear stuff like that, you're going like, is it going to have to fall? I mean, is that what's going to have to happen? Is it going to have to crash before people finally wake up and realize that you've got to quit voting these frickin' lying, slimy sacks of crap into office and purge that system and get some fresh blood in there and give those guys, the Rand, the Cruz, the Lee, the, you know, the Gohmert, the, you know, the rest of them, some support so we can possibly turn this ship around before it crashes? Because most of the stuff I study says we got maybe a year, two if we're lucky. And so I don't know if they're going to do anything about it, Rex. I don't. I really don't. We talk about this stuff all the time. You know, and I hope so, because, I don't know, I'd hate to move out of the country. But, you know, if idiots are going to destroy my country, I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm looking at places. South Island, New Zealand, I don't know, man, someplace.
They have strict immigration rules. Good luck getting in there.
Yeah, you just got to have money.
Maybe. is it going to crash? Maybe. Is it not going to crash? I don't know. Do people need to wake up? Yes. Are they going to wake up on their own? No. No, they're not. That's the whole thing. People don't just suddenly wake up and go, oh, you know what? I'm going to get my head out of my ass and realize that the politicians have been screwing me and turning me into a worker drone and ripping me off invisibly with inflation and taxing the crap out of me, and, you know, I'm going to do something about it today. It doesn't work that way, okay? You need to inform them. And the thing is, and like I was talking about in the opening, a lot of people like to be taken care of by the government. As long as the government sends them their food and gives them a modest job or some kind of benefit, like, you know, a check that comes in periodically, and you know, you've got your freedom of choice. You can, you know, pick from 42 different cereals, and you got 200 and some, 300 and some, you know, channels on television to choose from, and, you know, you can play around on the internet in your Candy Crush saga and look at Kim Kardashian's ass or whatever it is that you're into, and, you know, hey, you know, I'm happy. That's cool, and they, you know, they leave me alone for the most part, and I can read stuff and do stuff, and it's great. But that's not life, okay? We all lived with our parents. We grew up with our parents. Our parents took care of us, and their whole job, if they did it right, or even if they tried to do it right, was to turn us into adults so that we would go out in the world and do something with our lives independent of them. That doesn't mean you hate your parents so you leave them behind, or if they need help, you don't go back and take care of them, but it means that their job was to turn you into an adult, a self-sufficient, functioning human being that can work interdependently with other human beings. You know, that's the whole kind of notion of the division of labor that Adam Smith was talking about, even though there are some serious flaws in his system. But the fact is that we specialize and we do things and we figure out what our talent is that can best contribute to what others need, and that's how we sell our services or invent a new product, and we get paid and we contribute and everybody shares and everybody specializes and things get better. That's kind of how it works. But if everybody just wants to sit back and be taken care of like an adult adolescent, then who's going to carry the weight? Who's going to do the heavy lifting? Who's going to create the jobs? Who's going to invent the next thing? Who's going to provide the food that more and more people need? Who's going to take care of medicine? You see, that then the government comes in because of the vacuum that you've created, and it comes in and says, well, we'll take care of it. Well, Governments are only good at a couple of things. Generally, those things involve violence. Things like arresting you for committing a crime, trying you in court when you're guilty, incarcerating you. Or if someone's trying to come in and do something bad in our country, blow up a building or kill somebody, we're pretty good at killing them or repelling invasions. So usually it involves violence. Now, when you start asking the government to do beneficial things like feed you, and wipe your ass, and blow your nose, it's going to do it violently. And that's what we saw here. In that opening clip, you heard from Judge Andrew Napolitano talking about the Bundy Ranch. Of course, that's everybody's big thing right now. We go, oh, there's militia showing up. Let me be clear about something. There is no militia showing up. There's no militia. Since 1903, we've been systematically for 30 years disbanding the constitutional militia, and now we don't have one. People say, oh, the National Guard is a militia. No, the National Guard is pretty much just an adjunct of the U.S. Army. We don't have militia. Those are private gangs. They might be well-intentioned, but that's not statutory militia. And is Bundy right or wrong? I'm not entirely sure. It does appear that those are probably federal lands, although the Constitution pretty much does not allow the federal government to purchase land outside of the 10-mile square district that I happen to bring in live in, the Imperial City, for any purpose other than forts, munitions depots, Navy yards, and other needful buildings. So I don't know if that's legitimate. The Nevada Constitution does pretty much give up control of 88% of the land of Nevada forever to the federal government, which is dubious at best. I'm sure that someone was twisting some arms there to get them, admitted into the union. Who knows? I don't know the whole story, but that's really not the point, whether the land is federal or Clark County or whether Bundy's right in not paying the fees or whether he's wrong. The real question you have to ask yourself is, why is there a government agency that's armed to the friggin' teeth with helicopters and drones and snipers and all this stuff, right? Why is there a government agency that's going to go hassle this guy because he allegedly owes $300,000 in fees he hasn't paid since 1993, so we're going to make a big deal out of it today, and then we're going to spend $3 million rounding up his cattle, which is effectively theft, whether they're grazing on federal land or not. You're stealing his cattle. And to collect a $300,000, even if it's a $1 million fine, how does it make sense to spend $3 million to collect $1 million? Just to make it, well, we have to make sure that he obeys the law because otherwise everybody will disobey the law. Have we spent this much money and resources protecting the southern border? I mean, if everybody's got their panties in a bunch over the fact that Bundy's breaking the law, which he may or may not be. I mean, that's kind of between the sheriff, Clark County, Nevada, and maybe tertiarily involves the feds, but, you know, that could be worked out. But we're spending all this money because he broke the law. What about all the people that break the law by just walking across the border illegally into our country? Oh, there's no such thing as an illegal human being, Rex. I didn't say the human beings themselves were illegal, but they're trespassing in our country. They're coming in, and they bring with them criminals, sex trafficking, drugs. And I'm talking about, let's just assume that most of the people crossing the southern border are really just coming here to work, to really, you know, get a job and make something of their lives. That's fine, but they bring with them, and they're usually trafficked by criminals, drug dealers, child traffickers, who knows how many friggin', you know, terrorists from, you know, various jihadi networks in the Middle East are taking advantage of this. So is that really the right use of our federal resources to spend this amount of money beating up on one dude and his cattle, ostensibly for the sake of a friggin' turtle, when we got all these other problems? You see, this is what happens when you let lawlessness happen. Now, we're accusing Bundy, this guy whose family's been here since the 1800s. And he says since like the 1880s. Well, I think Nevada was admitted to the Union in 1864. So some of his claims are dubious. But that's neither here nor there, really. The fact is that everybody wants the federal government to, you know, bring down a barrel of hell and shove it up this guy's ass because he dared to graze on grasslands desert grasslands that the BLA says belong to them and a turtle. That's insane. In the meantime, we got Eric Holder held in contempt by the House, protected by the same son of a bitch from Nevada, Harry Reid, And, you know, he challenges Louis Gohmert, who's a congressman who has every right to get the documents that he needs from the Attorney General to investigate whether this federal agency is doing its job or not. But Eric Holder and Barack Obama and Kathleen Sebelius and all these other pricks are making law, and of course Congress allows them to, but they're making law in the executive department, rules and regs. These are unelected people, and the Constitution does not permit them to make law. And then, of course, they decide which laws to enforce and which not. And as you can see, they passed the Patient Protection and Affordable, you know, whatever, which isn't affordable or protection, and then they delayed it illegally some 30, 40 times. You can't make shit up like this. You cannot just arbitrarily do whatever the hell you want. You see, this is what happens when you throw out the rule of law and you have the arbitrary rule of men. And they're going to do all sorts of good things for you, and some people want that. And if you want to wake them up, you have to explain to them, like Rand Paul was saying in that clip, that welfare has its place. When someone is genuinely down and out, disabled, broke, whatever, you don't leave them lying in the street and just let them suffer. But maybe you take care of that personally. Maybe you take care of it through your church. Maybe you take care of it some voluntary association. Maybe you need your local government to step in. Maybe the state government. Sometimes even the federal government temporarily. But when you start taking people and making them dependent on all this crap, you take away any sense of individual liberty, any sense of community, any sense of responsibility and civic duty and contributing to the culture and contributing to the great American experiment, and you turn them into happy little servile slaves, and some people like that. Now, most people don't. It's just not natural. Don't try to, you know, argue with some kind of lazy Marxist or something like that, but find those people who vote Republican, who say they're conservative, who say they're libertarian, who say they're middle-class, run-of-the-mill average Americans, but end up voting for people like the R guy that from 2012 that Chris mentioned, which I just can't say that word right now. I'll throw up a little bit. I have to say the other one because you don't know who I'm talking about. I'll throw up a little bit too. Jeb Bush, because that's who they want. They want Jeb Bush or Chris Krusty the Clown from New Jersey, or they want you to fire Justin Amash and Louis Gohmert and Trey Gowdy and give us more pricks like Peter King. That's what they want, and that's what you have to work on. That's where you have to wake them up. And the only way that's going to happen is if libertarians and conservatives and Christians and all the people that really love liberty, and we have differences, but if we don't work together to take over this GOP and at the state level, the county level, at the federal level, the federal level is important because that's where all the disasters are coming from now. The state level is important because that's the only way you're going to eventually turn around and check it. But that's not going to happen if we're fighting amongst each other about stupid little crap. Our phone number is 646-649-1013. That's 646-649-1013. We're going to try to take calls in the next 30 minutes or so. And we'll be live on the air till 11 p.m. Eastern, at which time your browser will cut you off and you won't be able to hear anymore unless you're called in on your handset, 646-649-1013. Remember that we broadcast 9 p.m. Eastern every Sunday, bringing you grassroots activism for the conservative cause of liberty. And we'll be off next Sunday, of course, for Easter, but we'll play some replay of something or cut something up for you. And anytime you want to hear any of our shows, just go to blogtalkradio.com, search out Liberty's Thunder. You scroll down the page. Every show is listed there. You just click on the title. It's hyperlinked. It plays right in your browser. And if you go below the scrolling graphics and right-click the download button, you can download an MP3 that you can listen in your MP3-enabled device. You can email it to people. You can take it to burn a CD, take it to your Republican Party meetings, Campaign for Liberty, Tea Party meetings, or what have you. The important thing is that if you, every single day, and this is thankless work, sometimes it's tiring, and you're not going to get a pat on the back for it, but this is the work that you have to do every single day. You got to reach out to somebody who hasn't heard this message before, somebody who might just get politically active a week before the election and then go pull a lever for the elephants, somebody who actually agrees with our principles but maybe doesn't know what to do. What can you do? You can do a lot of things. You can make phone calls. You can give money. You can get the word out. You can go door knocking. The idea is, well, the Republicans suck. Yeah, the Republicans suck. We know the Republicans suck. The Republicans have sucked since 1854, okay? But that's the only wing of the national duopoly where you got any shot, where you got people like Rand Paul and Ted Cruz and Mike Lee and Justin Amash and Trey Gowdy and Louis Gohmert. So you got to get more of them in there. And the only way you do that is you work for them. Now, if you, the guy in your state is actually a good guy, of course, I doubt there's too many of them, but let's just say that you like your guy and he's going to win anyway, fine, work somewhere else. Maybe make some phone calls into Michigan to protect Justin Amash, who happens to post and tweet every vote and why on social media so that you can find out what he's thinking, what he's doing. Why not help out Matt Bevin so he can take out Mitch McConnell, who's just the crappiest Republican minority leader that we can have? And if the Republicans do take the Senate, which there's a good possibility they will, he'll be the majority leader? Really, do you want Mitch McConnell screwing you with more power? Come on. And don't give me this, well, he's better than Reid. No, he's not. He's the same thing as Reid. He just happens to wear your jersey, and that's a stupid reason to support him. How about getting rid of Lindsey Graham? I mean, that chick is dangerous. She has to be fired. You know, whatever it is that you can do, do something every single day. Because if we don't start turning this around right now, where our local communities and our states and independence and voluntarism and liberty is reigning again, we're going to be controlled. And those of us that won't comply, well, you know, the hammer of Thor is going to come down on you like it almost did on Bundy, and it might still. That's what's going to happen, because that's what they will do to those who will not go along with the system. But you see, most people are going along with the system because they've forgotten what it's like to stand up. They've been sitting on their asses, stuffing their face with Cheetos and watching reality TV and poking around on the Internet for so long that they have just become soft, silly, easily entertained, mindless, low-thinking morons. You know, and if you don't get them inspired to stand up and be productive again and have a real solid culture where you have self-restraint over yourself and you do the work that you're required to do, whatever job you decide, there are some duties that go along with it. Living in this country and being a citizen has duties along with it. There's no right without duty. You have responsibilities, and you've got to step up and do that work. And if we don't get people involved, we don't get them active, we don't get them interested, you're either going to be in a fusion, in a FEMA camp, or you're going to be a happy little servile slave. Sorry, I went off there. I didn't mean to do that. Chris?
No, man, you're on a roll tonight. I'm just sitting out here on my patio. I've got a good fire going. You know, it's beautiful. I've had two good sunshiny days. It's just great. No, that was awesome. I don't know. I agree 100%. This is why we do what we do, because we sure in the hell don't get paid to do it. You know, it's not. I'm not complaining. I'm just being straight up. You know, there's guys make millions of dollars doing what we're doing, and I don't trust any of them. I have not listened to the radio. I have not listened to Fox News. I have not listened to anybody since they started lying about the Ukraine, because I'm just sick of it. I'm sick of the bull crap. I'm sick of the neocons control everything in this country, you know, and our war budget just is, you know, just went up because they scared everybody that Russia was going to invade the world. You know, the only invasion of any country I can see around the world is us. Okay. Anyway, off that subject. But, you know, it is amazing to me that we just fall for the same trap over and over and over and over again. Now, I have never been that involved in federal politics. You know, I lived in Alaska half my life, and, you know, the rest of you guys were like the lower 48, and you were all nuts. And you know, we lived in our state, and I lived in, you know, I grew up in Oregon and Washington before the Californians came up here and ruined it. You know, I grew up in Oregon and Washington. And, you know, it was just this, you know, we were the last frontiers, you know, Oregon, Washington, Alaska. And people were self-sufficient. And, you know, I remember growing up with my granddad. He was an old Okey farmer, you know, and came to Oregon in the Dust Bowl Depression on a dirt road in a Model A Ford. And it was, you know, family, God, country, family was everything. You work hard. You were honest. A handshake was your word. I mean, I'm like cut from a whole different world. You know, I don't know how in the hell I survive in this crazy world today where you can trust nobody, you can't trust the news, you can't trust your politician, you can't trust your neighbor. There might be a freaking pedophile down the street because, you know, the liberals and make sure that they got all the rights and we don't. You know, it's just, it's insane. It's insanity. And you know, if you want to get conspiratorial, it's all a plan. And, you know, there's some crazy evil people that run the world. And they don't have good intentions. When I look out across the world, and because I study what's going on internationally a lot, and I look across the world, I actually posted a link on one of the threads. I don't remember what it was. You know, I was doing some research trying to figure out how many military conflicts there are in the world, and I finally found a resource, and I scrolled, and I scrolled, and I scrolled, and I scrolled, and it was all subdivided by, you know, country, or locate, not countries, but by regions around the world. And I'm going, the world is mad. It's insane. What in the hell? And the first thing that came to my mind is how many of these conflicts and these situations is the U.S. involved in? And why, number one. Number two, what's it costing us? Number three, what's the end game? I love that talk where Rand Paul was at the Veterans Affair. I think it was in Kentucky. And he was
speaking, I didn't love that.
You know, I mean, he just made so much sense because they like to, you know, to pin him as some kind of isolationist, bull crap. Lies, spin, lies, scare the nation. Rand Paul is going to strip our military and we're going to be defenseless. My God, people, we got over 800 bases around the world. We spend more money than all the rest of the countries put together on military. Now they want to jack it up to $990 billion frickin' dollars, you know, and we're broke and we can't take care of our veterans. And it's insanity. It is beyond, it's just, it's almost, I want to say it's evil. You know, I don't know how to explain some of the things that I see and read and study and perceptions that I have from the things that I look at. You know, I'll go down a rabbit hole. I'll have a question, you know, what's going on in Syria. Remember that? When I started that thread going, hey, there's some crap going on in Syria. Let's study this. And by the time we were done, we were like, oh, my God, this is us doing this. I mean, it was just terrible to see that reality. And then the Ukraine, and then another 140 places around the world. Now we got the whole AFRICOM thing and all the conflicts in Africa. I mean, that's the biggest list of conflicts in the world is Africa. And ain't all of them, trust me. But it's pretty big, and it's everywhere. And I'm thinking, you know, we live in this country, and we live a pretty damn good life. And somebody that's poverty-stricken in America lives better 90% of the world. That right there is a wake-up call, but doesn't seem to affect most Americans because I guess they don't give a shit. But, you know, and you can't do everything about everybody around the world, but what in the hell, I get that, but what in the hell is our military doing there? What's the CIA doing there? What the hell is my tax dollars funding some warlord so he can have a yacht in the Caribbean doing there? And why in the hell isn't it transparent? Why don't the people know about it? And why don't the people have a say? Because most of this shit, they've basically taken the power away from Congress. You know, when you have dozens and dozens and dozens of unconstitutional departments, you know, whether CIA, NSA, you know, Bureau of Land Management, that's a good one, got a lot of attention lately. And, you know, I dealt with all this shit in Alaska, you know, the federal government coming in and taking over Alaskan land. And want to control everything. Right before I moved out of Alaska, that was a huge deal. You know, something in what you were saying about Nevada was in the charter that when they became a state after a certain period of time, then the federal government was, you know, supposed to take over managing the lands. And you think about, well, why in the hell do you need that? I thought we were a republic. You know, and our federal scientists and Forest Service people better than a state scientist or a state Forest Service person? No, it's about control.
Or a private owner?
Yeah, it's totalitarianism. You know, it's communism. A lot of people don't, you know, and I remember way back when in the primary, I was probably the first person in about 500 groups I was involved in that said, you don't get it. Romney is not a moderate. He is a full-fledged progressive. Look at his record. And then as we got towards the end of the battle, people were finally catching on, and then you started hearing people who have a bigger voice than you and I do saying it. And then I started saying the word fascism I don't know, what, 6, 7, 8, 9 months ago, and nobody was talking about it. Now we have people, you're hearing it from mainstream people, going, this is what fascism is. Fascism is where you still have private enterprise, but everything is controlled by a central authority. And that means that the only way that private enterprise becomes successful, wealthier, more powerful, gets better deals, more deals, is if they're tied to the government, the federal government. And this is very similar to Rome right before it fell. You know, if you wanted anything, whether you were in arms, you know, you made arms for weapons or you dealt with farming or industry of any kind. Of course, they didn't have industry like we do today, but they still had industry, but it became so central powered that the only way you could operate in that economy was if you were tied to a bunch of crooked politicians in the Senate or the plebs, you know. And so it's the same thing. And we've been here before thousands of times throughout history on micro scales to large scales to totalitarianism to the nth degree. I mean, more human beings have died and been oppressed in the 20th century than in the whole history of the world. Why? I mean, I thought we were enlightened. I thought we had come so far as a race that America was so incredible and freedom and the Bill of Rights, and we were going to spread democracy around the world. And I challenge people. I'm on this trek right now where I'm trying to find countries that we've invaded, toppled, you know, created a dictator in, whatever, you know, where we've been in there manipulating it, that are better off because of the U.S. involvement. Because I'd like to find one for the trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars. Costa Rica, yeah, right. They're really doing good, aren't they? Aren't they all on welfare? You know, but you know what I'm saying? I mean, it's that thing where if I could look out across the land and go and beat my chest and go, I'm proud to be an American, look at the world that we've created, I'd be happy. You know, I could say, wow, we are great. We are exceptional. We have done great work.
Well, we are.
And I'm like going, you know, wait a second. Something's broken here from the concept of what the founding fathers produced and the prosperity of coming out of the Second World War and the explosion of industry and technology and the wealth that was created for the middle class. I mean, a lot of people, all they do is whine about the middle class, the middle class, the middle class. Well, the politicians are destroying the middle class. That and the Fed printing money, this illegal entity.
Well, usually speak about what you're targeting.
What?
You're usually obsessed with whatever you're targeting. So since they're targeting
the
middle class, it's on their mind.
Well, and the thing is people talk about the middle class like it's some, you know, forever thing and it's being destroyed. And really, the middle class is a fairly new thing in our world, you know. And it rose and became very prosperous, and then they attacked it because it was very prosperous. And you could tax people and get them in debt. And, I mean, my parents' generation, and my parents are still alive. They're in their 80s, but they're still alive. But they were very frugal with their money. You know, they paid off their homes. They paid off their cars. They saved money. I remember when they got their first credit card, they were scared to death of it. And they were extremely frugal. Their per capita income in the world is the highest in that generation because they grew up in the Depression. And they, you know, so, you know, they didn't have, like my mom didn't have a running toilet, you know, in the house when she, you know, all the way through high school. And so when they became adults and then the world, you know, my dad came out of the Korean War, And the country started exploding because we blew up all the factories all over the world. So America had factories. So we became the industrial center of the world. And we had the oil, and we were the oil producer of the world. You know, it's funny how that's all turned around. Now China has all the oil and Russia produces. I mean, China has all the manufacturing and Russia has all the oil. I mean, we have oil, but they won't let it get it. So, you know, we've flip-flopped. And that's what, I mean, that's the message of the century, Rex, you know, because it's been 100 years since the Fed was formed and the Senate was gone to a popular vote and the income tax was instilled. And 100 years later, how you doing, America? Are you working hard enough yet? You got you, your wife, your kids, you got two jobs, if you can find one, or you got three part-time jobs because nobody will hire you full-time. And you got a whole generation of kids with a $1.3 trillion student loan debt that can't get a damn job. 5 years later. You know, we rose up. Japan attacked Hawaii. We rose up and in 3.5 years built this monster military industrial machine, went out in the world and defeated three enemies on multiple continents in 3.5 years and came home. 3.5 years. Tens of millions of people. And today we can't even build a damn bridge in 15 years without going triple over budget. It's broken.
Yeah, but that other thing worked out so good. We figured, well, let's repeat World War II over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, what stop?
It's working. We're good at it.
Yeah, but we're not good at it anymore.
Well, that's because you're running
Vietnam.
Out of money.
Look at Vietnam. Look at Korea. Look at, you know, the bigger wars we fought, Iraq, Afghanistan. You know, we can't even figure out how to get our damn equipment out of Afghanistan because America's pissed everybody off around them. You know,
why would we want to get our equipment out? You just kind of blow it up over there, and then you have to spend money to rebuild it over here. See, that's how it works.
Well, that's what
it's
they did. They left tens of millions of dollars equipment in Iraq. My son was there.
Of course. They lost trillions of dollars. They don't even know how to account for it. Government can barely do anything, including running the military apparatus.
You can't even do that anymore.
So, you know, the fact is that the only reason our military is ever truly successful is because private companies decide, hey, you know what, we're going to war, it's a just war, we agree with this war, and they turn their manufacturing power towards making war machines. And when it's a legitimate cause for war, you have people motivated to actually go defend. Now, we always talk about our troops, you know, we have to thank them for defending our liberty. Well, that's why most of them, there are some who didn't, there are some who just went for the perks, okay, but most of them did join the military in order to defend our freedom. But the politicians that deploy them are not deploying them anywhere where they're defending our freedom. And that's what you have as the problem. And that's one of the reasons why there's no standing army permitted in the Constitution. We're supposed to have a militia where every American serves. And by the way, if you had a militia, if every citizen of Nevada, including all those in Clark County, were actually part of the constitutional militia that would enforce the laws, this Bundy problem would not be occurring. He would have either been told, pay your fines, get off the land, and he would have complied. The sheriff could have come in and got him. Or he would have been permitted to do it because everybody thinks, hey, you know what, no one's really using this land other than the turtles, so we might as well let the cows go out there too because, frankly, they've been there and they haven't hurt the turtles, so it's perfectly okay. So, you know, it would have been resolved, but no, it's not. It's not resolved because this is not about Bundy. This is not about his cows. It's not about a turtle.
Or a turtle.
This is about they have to show you their power to legitimize their little fiefdom. This BLM has to say, well, we have to do something so that we can show results, so we can increase our budget, we can show results that we're a necessary department, and then they'll keep funding us. That's what they have to do. And, of course, the more you put up with, and you go, well, this isn't worth it, and this isn't worth it, and this is okay, fine, I'll let them do that. Before you know it, what totalitarianism is when every association that you have in civil society is gone. And the government is every association that you have. See, that's what happens. When you have radical individualism, we become atomized individuals. Individuals is in, I have my individual rights, and I'm on my own island, and you don't know anybody around you, and you don't live in a community, you don't know your county, you don't know what the government in your county is doing, you don't know what your state government is doing, you don't know what the federal government is doing, and they just tell you what to do, and you just go by it. But you're not paying attention to what's going on because you're all by yourself. The whole idea about the little platoons of communities is so that our individual rights are protected, guaranteed, and what we need is provided for by our community, whether it's a business community, a mutual aid association, your church or religious group, your actual geographic community amongst where you live, your local government. These are all the things that create the freedom in a restrained culture where we're not stepping on each other's toes because that's just not who we are because of the way our culture is. Then the government has very few things that it's supposed to do, and it does them. But when you give up all that stuff, when you're not participating, when you're not involved, when you're not strengthening your community, when you're not contributing to your local associations, then you get one big association, and that is you alone and this giant government.
and you will lose every single time. They'll give you some stuff, but they have to take it from somebody else. So it takes away your incentive to actually do anything. You think, well, crap, if they're going to give me, you know, this much money every month and they're taking it from somebody else, I don't want to be the guy they're taking it from, so I don't want to make more money because they'll just take it from me. And then the whole thing starts to implode and the totalitarian state gets bigger and bigger and bigger. We're actually in the second hour now, so light up my line, 646-649-1013, last show before Easter, 646-649-1013. And one of the things that the government's supposed to do, Chris, it's not supposed to be owning land within the United States other than where it needs to have a Navy yard or, you know, docks, maybe some forts or, you know, bases, munitions. These are the things the Constitution allows it to have, and if you want that to be different, then you have to amend your Constitution. So I don't care if the Nevada Constitution says, well, we're giving them all the land. The federal government can't take the land, even if the state legislature decides to give it to them, unless they have a specific constitutional purpose for it. We don't just sell land randomly to the federal government so it becomes the biggest landowner of the country. Because guess what happens when they go broke? Oh, wait, they are broke. Guess what happens? Their debtors start to ask for stuff, their creditors. They start to ask for stuff. So when the Chinese say, well, we got these $1.3 trillion in bonds and your dollar's worth shit, how about some land? Oh, hey, you know what? We got this nice piece out in Nevada. We got some in Utah. There's good land in Alaska. How about we sell you that land to, you know, offset
our bond? They do it with resources, Rex. They do it with resources, too.
That's what I'm saying. And what about the mineral rights? What about the mining rights? You know, the oil? So you don't give up your land to a foreign power because you've given it to your federal government, which is basically broke. See, these are the stupid things. But one of the things that they are supposed to do is they are supposed to provide for the common defense, and they are supposed to manage the borders of these United States that border with other nations. We have a big southern border with Mexico. Most of those Mexican people coming over here might have good intentions and might want to come here and work. Well, it's fine. Let's make it easier for them to come in through the front door, provided they actually want to come here and contribute to America. But when one out of four Americans is either unemployed or underemployed, you don't really need new people coming in. When you have full employment, then you're going to need new people coming in because you won't have enough people to do the job, predominantly because you killed 50 million of them in the last 40 years. But right now, we don't need it. So maybe we should have a closed border. But we don't. We spend the money on Bundy's ranch. We spend the money rounding up to collect $1 million in fines. We spend $3 million stealing someone's cattle and selling them at auction. It's not a good idea. Now, there is a certain would-be presidential hopeful, Chris. We had him on the show last week, played a couple of clips. He's related to, I think, two prior presidents, and he's got some interesting things to say about immigration. And we've got a son of an immigrant who happens to be a senator in the United States who comments on it. It's a three-minute clip. We'll come back on the other side of this.
Yes, they broke the law, but it's not a felony. It's kind of it's an act of love. It's an act of commitment to your family.
Of course, Jeb Bush was talking there about wanting to earn a living for your family. Let's bring in Senator Ted Cruz, Republican of Texas. He's also no stranger to 2016 speculation. Senator, what is your reaction? I've heard a lot of conservatives criticizing these comments from Jeb Bush.
Well, look, I'm a big fan of Jeb Bush's. He's from Florida. I'm from Texas. We both are states that have dealt with a lot of immigration. And there's no doubt that immigrants come to this country because they're seeking a better world. They're seeking the American dream, and they're seeking a better life for their kids. And all of that is positive and beneficial. What isn't positive and beneficial is breaking the law to do so. And
he said it's not a felony.
Well, look, in my view, we need to be a nation that welcomes and celebrates legal immigrants, people who follow the rules and come here according to the law. That we're a nation of immigrants, we need to celebrate that. But at the same time, rule of law matters. And if you look at any sovereign nation, securing your border is critically important. And I'll tell you, one of the big reasons has to do with just the humanity of it. You know, if you come down to Texas and you see the conditions where you see photographs that are heartbreaking, of bodies of women and children left abandoned in the desert because they entrust themselves to transnational global criminal cartels who smuggle them in, who assault them, who leave them to die, This is not a humane system, and we need to solve the problem, secure the borders, and then improve and streamline legal immigration so people can come to America consistent with the rule of law.
Bush says he'll make a decision about running by the end of the year. There are a lot of, as you know, there are a lot of people in the fundraising arm of the Republican Party, a lot of Republican officials in Washington, D.C., who are looking for a white knight, somebody who will lead the party to the White House in 2016. They were looking at Chris Christie. Now a lot of them are talking about Jeb Bush. Is there a disconnect between those people in the Republican Party and the grassroots?
Well, listen, I like Jeb Bush. I like Chris Christie. I respect them both.
Sure, but I'm talking about these forces who...
You know, I do think there are folks in Washington who want to pick the party's nominee, and they inevitably want to pick a nominee who they think won't rock the boat. And in my view, from the perspective of a Republican who believes we need to win, and we need to win because the country's on the wrong path, because we're facing enormous fiscal and economic challenges, I think the only way Republicans win is to have a candidate who runs as a strong conservative with a positive, hopeful, optimistic message. That's the path to victory. And I don't think Washington elites are going to be very effective picking the nominee. I think it's going to be quite rightly a decision for the grassroots to make.
Maybe the Washington elites and the Rhino Clique, that's the consultant lobbyist establishment complex, are picking the next Rhino to run as an act of love. How about that, Chris?
You don't want me to comment on what I think. That's pretty disgusting. I can't say it on the radio what I think about that kind of love.
Yeah.
My God, are these people real? Are they that desperate and that insane and that disconnected from the rest of the country and the rest of the world?
They're like liberals.
They are. I mean, come on. I mean, let's get real. You go back, go back and listen to some of Kennedy's speeches. He sounds more conservative than most Republicans, and he was a Democrat, you know. And then you leap forward and you look across the board. I mean, this disease, this progressive disease, and I think that this is something that Republican would-be voters need to get clear in their mind. There ain't a lot of difference between a Republican and a Democrat of 20 years ago. And you have to look at more than just big spending. You have to ask yourself, what is the end game? Why are we still in the UN? Why do we spend $500-600 billion a year on military? Why are we in conflicts and wars and toppling governments and funding Al-Qaeda in one place and killing them in another? You know, why are we losing our blood and our treasure and the wealth of our country to this insanity? What is the end game? And I guess that, you know, we don't really get into that much because it gets kind of squirrely out there and never land. But there are people who think that the European Socialistic United Nations, EU, you know, European Union model is the future. And you can go online and listen to Nigel Farage, which is probably, I would say, is the English Tea Party movement, except that it's a separate party. It's not inside any party, and they're about half of the country now. They've really exploded. And listen to him. This guy wants to fire everybody in the EU and shut it down. He wants England to get out of the EU because it is a socialist nightmare. They want, you know, wide open borders and everybody screwing everybody and everybody loving everybody and everybody just taxed to hell and producing and the wealth, you know, and the corporations and the banks to control everybody. And it's insanity. And a lot of Europe is falling apart because of it. A lot of countries are starting to vote conservatives back into power, including France, which was pretty wild. 150 elections, they got conservatives. So, you know, this love fest for this utopian open border, you know, no cultural world, you know, that comes out of the, oh God, just, you know, it comes from Satan, whatever. You know, let's just go there, okay? But, you know, it comes out of this socialistic mindset, you know, that you are not what you are, that we're all one big happy family and everything's wonderful. Well,
that's why we got conflicts all over the world. We're not all one big happy family, and cultures and religions and beliefs and the past and history all, you know, move forward into today's world and still matter. And we're trying to force people into being this unisex, no sex, everybody's sex, you know, world. You know what I mean? And it don't work. Yeah, it doesn't work, you know. And I'm telling you, people get it. And I think the majority of people understand it. But the mechanism, the governments, the organizations, the agencies, and the people in power are embedded. And while you've been working and living the American dream, they've got all the power. You know, there's 3,000 laws made last year, and Congress passed, like, what, 33? So who's passing all those laws? All these unconstitutional organizations. You know, these AB, you know, the alphabet soup, the ABC, the NSA, the IRS, you know, they just write law, which is unconstitutional.
The FU2, the Department of,
you know,
FU2.
Yeah, FU2, FUEU. So, you know, that's what we're up against. And it's a form of insanity. It's a form of evil. And so, you know, it's kind of that question of, are you going to wake up? You know, you and I started on 2014 as soon as Romney stole the primary. And we started saying, okay, the next most important thing is the midterms. And we've been talking about it. We were talking about it before nobody even bothered talking about it. You know, they were all, you know, feeling flush with remorse that a Republican didn't win. And I'm saying, well, it wouldn't have mattered because it wouldn't have been a real Republican anyway. So what the hell? You know, maybe now that Obama's got a second term, that he'll make people miserable enough that people will wake the hell up and quit voting these socialists into power. And I don't mean socialists as in Democrats. I mean either party socialists. Because you got commies and socialists on the left, and you got rhinos and socialist progressives on the right. And they're all the same people, just varying degrees of temperature. And the end game is all the same. You know, they want us in some world love fest, you know, with Europe, and we're all one big happy family. And the United States is subservient like a state to the EU. Because the United States figures it's going to control the EU because we pretty much pay for it. We pretty much pay for most of NATO, and we think we're the big dog on the block, even though our whole economy's falling apart underneath our feet. And the world's starting to move away from the U.S. and the U.S. dollar. So, you know, it is definitely a wake-up call. Question is, will people wake up? I know some people are just flat-ass awake, and, you know, guys like you, you've been into this stuff a lot longer than I have. I'm a newbie. You know, but it didn't take me long to figure it out, you know, because the basic principles of what I was raised to believe, you know, were already violated. And so then it was just a matter of putting the political stuff together and figure out why it's as bad as it is and who the players are. And I think the I don't know if it was the hardest part, but one of the most disconcerting parts was to realize the Republicans were, you know, huge part of the problem.
Huge part.
So there we are.
Huge end of the problem. They invented the problem before the Democrats. I mean, you know, let's be clear about that. You know, the Republican Party was formed from the leftovers of the Whig Party, and they were the big corporate progressives, big government, big spenders, not the Democrats, okay? Things have – they invented the game. The only thing is that we – some of us recall 64, 1980, 84, 1994, so we think that's the Republican Party. That's not the Republican Party. That's the conservative movement. And just like Reagan said in that beginning, okay, at the core of conservatism is libertarianism. Now, there are some significant differences. We've talked about them. But conservatives and libertarians have far more in common than they do different. Unfortunately, when you take libertarianism, classical liberalism, to its far radical end, you end up with the French Revolution and the Jacobins. Conservatism tempers that. Conservatism relies on prescription and tradition and an objective moral order, which doesn't have to have a religious connotation, although I think it should, but that's between you and God. It has a philosophical foundation, the natural law. So that's the difference. And what's happening here, look, Jeb Bush was real sneaky there. You know, these people coming to this country, it's an act of love. Yes, coming to America to build a better life for your family is an act of love. But you can't break the law to do it, because then you're coming here saying, the first thing I'm going to do is violate the rule of law. Now, some people out there think we should have open borders, so people should just willy-nilly go all over the place. It doesn't work that way. It never works that way. Okay? You can't have that. You do not have a country if people just willy-nilly walk in and out, because some people do want to do you harm. Well, the government hasn't done a good job, Rex, of preventing that from happening. Well, the government has to do a better job. That's actually one of its jobs. If it would focus on the very few 18 jobs that it actually has and leaves everything else to the states and the people and the mediating institutions. And what are those, Rex? You know, what is this fancy talk? Well, those are the things that do the stuff that we need to have a civilization. Individuals cannot have a civilization. We have to work together, but voluntarily for the most part. And that's what you have. Business associations, private businesses. You know, everybody, all corporations are bad corporations. Well, not all corporations are bad. There are different kinds of corporate bodies. Corporate bodies means that we are doing something together as a group. Small groups, large groups, whatever. The core unit is the family unit. And then from there you go out into private associations, churches, religious groups, voluntary associations, businesses, local governments, municipalities, states. There are multiple institutions that come between us and government. And when you get rid of those, the government takes over those roles. And that's what we're talking about here. And Ted Cruz hit him back. And let's be clear. Ted Cruz is a little bit closer to being an immigrant than Jeb Bush. So he might know a thing or two about it. Oh, but Jeb Bush married a Latino woman, so he'd appeal to Latins. Really? Do you really think that people are going to overwhelmingly elect somebody simply because they identify with their ethnic or racial identity? Well, look at Barack Obama. Really? If 100% of black Americans voted for Barack Obama and nobody else did, he wouldn't have won. Barack Obama won because white people voted for him. And so did Asians and Mexicans and everybody else who voted for him more than they voted for the other two losers that the Republicans put up. So that's a bunch of horseshit. Simple fact is, ideas are what attract people. And the ideas that we have in our Constitution, the conservative ideas, the slash libertarian ideas, are solid and attractive and benefit people. And that's the message that has to be made. And if you don't make it, you're going to lose. When people start thinking with their feelings, like Jeb Bush was hoping for me, he tells you that it's an act of love, so somehow all the immigrants will vote for him because it's an act of love to have all their brothers and sisters come across the border illegally. No, it's not. It's dangerous. An act of love would be, hey, we want to come here and contribute. We don't want to leech off the welfare state. We don't want government freebies. We want to build a business. We want to work hard. We want to do the job that, you know, will make our family better. Great. Come in through the front door. Lots of people have done it before, and people can do it again. Very simple. These things can be handled, but the government wants to do everything it's not supposed to do, and it isn't doing any of the things it is supposed to do, because that puts you on edge, and you end up with a situation like we had with the Bundy Ranch. We got about half an hour left, so please start calling them and start taking calls shortly after this clip, 646-649-1013. Chris, I'm going to let you pick it. You want to go with Death of Money, or are you going to go with Mike Lee talking about money?
Death of Money.
Death of Money. All right, so 5-minute clip, and we're going to take calls on the other side. Call in 646-649-1013.
Money, money, money. And I want to start off asking you, now, your new book, The Death of Money, it's out today, so everyone should go pick it up. And it sounds pretty provocative, but you argue that it isn't as provocative as the title may suggest. Now, what do you mean by the death of money, and why isn't the concept provocative?
Well, two reasons, Aaron. The death of money, I'm really talking about the loss of confidence in money. In other words, people say the dollar is not backed by anything. Well, it is backed by one thing, which is confidence. If people believe in a sound dollar, believe the monetary authorities are doing the right thing, then they'll have confidence and continue to use it. But when that confidence is lost, when that confidence is destroyed, first of all, it's fragile. It can go away very quickly. And secondly, once you lose it, it's very hard to get back. When I talk about the coming collapse of the international monetary system, I've made the point that the international monetary system has collapsed three times in the past 100 years. 1914, 1939, 1971. So these things do happen every 30 or 40 years. I'm not saying we're due like clockwork. I'm just saying there's nothing unusual about a collapse of the system. And when it happens, it's not the end of the world. It just means the major trading financial powers get together and they come up with a new system, as they did at Bretton Woods in 1944 and Genoa, Italy in 1922 and the Smithsonian Conference in 1971. So what I'm doing is, first of all, explaining to the reader what the vulnerabilities are and why and how the system will collapse. And secondly, taking the reader forward as to what the new system will look like. And that's a good guide for investors. You don't have to wait until the collapse comes. You can get
name
here. The special drawing right called the SDR. You go back to when the Fed was created. Why don't we call it the Central Bank of the United States, which is what it is? It was called the Federal Reserve because they wanted to fool people, fool the citizens about what it actually was. America had had central banks twice before, and they were closed by the people. So they called it the Federal Reserve. Same thing with the SDR. It's really world money. It's the easiest way to understand it. It's world money. But world money sounds kind of scary and spooky, so they call it special drawing rights. But don't be fooled by the name, number one. Number two, is it backed by anything? No, it's not backed by anything. Now, actually, John Maynard Keynes' idea for the bank corps at Bretton Woods in 1944, that actually was backed by something. Keynes, near the end of his life, favored a commodity standard, not a pure gold standard, but gold was included in the basket along with other commodities. So the bank corps would have been backed by something. The SDR is not backed by anything. Easiest way to understand it, the Fed has a printing press, they can print dollars. The IMF has a printing press, they can print SDRs. And they will print the SDRs the next time there's a liquidity crisis, because the next crisis, for the reason I explained earlier, is going to be bigger than the Fed. And the Fed's already insolvent on a mark-to-market basis. They're leveraged 80 to 1. They look like a bad hedge fund. The Fed's at the outer limit of what they can do, and so the only clean balance sheet left in the world is the IMF. They're only leveraged about 3 to 1, so they have a lot more headroom, and they're going to issue these SDRs. By the way, they did issue SDRs in 2009. I think I might have been the only one who noticed, other than Dominic Strauss-Kahn and the rest of the people at the IMF. But the fact is, it's world money. It won't be issued on a calm day. It'll be issued in a crisis because it is meant to provide liquidity. Remains to be seen if people will accept it, but they might not have any choice because they don't understand it. The IMF is not elected. They've got kings, dictators, communists, and others on their executive committee. And so people don't understand it. It's opaque. We won't have them in our pockets. SDRs are not walking around money. We'll still have dollars, but they'll be like Mexican pesos or Turkish lira. It'll be a local currency. It won't be the world currency. The world currency will be the SDR.
We don't know everything.
Certainly, China has a dedicated team that does nothing but this within the People's Liberation Army. I think the capabilities of Russian hackers are no secret. That's very well known. The U.S. has its own hacking teams. But we've also heard from the Iranians, the Israelis, the Syrian Electronic Army. So there are lots of hacking teams around the world. Some of them are state-sponsored. Some of them are criminal gangs. And one of the problems in cyberspace is you can't tell if something is a malicious attack designed to steal money and information or if it's a military attack designed to disable a system. Now, you can have cyber warfare that's not financial. That would be aimed at infrastructure. So, the power grid, the internet backbone, a dam. Imagine taking over control of a dam and opening the valves and flooding a valley, or taking control of the power grid. So that's one kind of cyber warfare. Cyber financial warfare is when you use cyber capabilities to penetrate the financial system. Imagine they got inside order entry systems at the major exchanges. They could close the exchange. That's pretty bad, obviously. But there may be something worse than closing the exchange, which is penetrating the exchange and putting out spoof sell orders that you couldn't tell from the real thing and just sell everything, and then the panic would feed on itself. Those are the kind of things that are out there, and they're real threats. They're there today, and I mentioned the countries that are capable of it. Right now, we have a balance of financial terror, which means no one wants to escalate to that level because the other guy could strike back. But, it all depends. Things could happen by accident. And also things, if people don't understand the threat clearly enough, the way I've just described it, they could start the escalation and not understand how bad it can get. These things are all out there. This is independent of the market-related catastrophe that I'm also anticipating, but you could have a financial warfare catastrophe. The great thing about gold, it's not digital. You can't wipe out gold digitally. You can turn off the power, shut down the internet, close the stock exchange, and your gold is still gold.
Jim, I love gold.
That was gold member. Actually, that was Rickards. But here's the interesting thing. The interesting thing is, if you think that things suck because of the Federal Reserve, just keep in mind one thing. The Federal Reserve is our crappy fiat scheme central bank, even though it does have foreign influence. If it goes to an IMF SDR standard and the Federal Reserve is just a subsidiary of that, then you're no longer at the top of the pyramid, Mr. and Mrs. America. You're now just like everybody else in the world who's getting plundered. And that's a really scary thought. I don't like the Federal Reserve. We need to end the Federal Reserve. But replacing the Federal Reserve with an international central bank is even worse. Now, in a sense, it's already de facto done.
Yeah.
But the fact is that we control...
commies.
Yeah, exactly. We control the shots to some degree. Now, that'll change dramatically. And so, you know, you have to ask yourself, all the resources are pointed at Bundy and his cattle while the southern border is a sieve, yet somehow they want to protect our cyber systems from foreign attacks. I mean, just think about that, right? So what you're saying is we have to prevent terrorists from hacking the New York Stock Exchange or bringing down the electric grid electronically. But if they just want to walk across the border and blow it up, that's okay. That's basically what they're saying, because what happens is once the terrorist comes in and blows something up, it's gone, and then what will happen? The same thing that happened in Boston a year ago. It'll become a martial law situation, and guess who gets caught up in that dragnet? Not just Bundy, not just the terrorists, all of us. And that's because you're not carrying your own weight locally, so the federal government is going to come in and take over, and that is hard despotism, which will give way to soft despotism afterwards, and you'll just comply because you know that they could kick your ass. Chris, to you, and then we're going to bring on a caller. Joseph is on the line with us. And for anybody else, you've got about a half an hour, 646-649-1013. Give us a call. Go ahead, Chris.
That video, everybody on the face of the earth needs to watch that interview because that was just a short segment, you know, very small piece of the whole 26-minute interview. This guy's really sharp. He knows his stuff. He's written multiple books. He's a finance guy. He's definitely a gold standard guy. He's also consults the Pentagon on the cybersecurity stuff and, you know, things like that. So he knows his stuff, and he's absolutely right. And he's very low-key. One of the things that I think was telltaling in the conversation was this might happen. He didn't say that. He said, when it happens, this is what's going to happen. And I think that that's the wake-up call. Years ago, 10, 15, 20 years ago, you know, we needed to look into the future and say, hey, we want to prevent this from happening. Now, most of the people I listen to or research are saying, well, when it happens, this is what we're going to have to do to survive it. So I don't think a lot of people are figuring, you know, are real positive about, especially with the last 5 years of hell that the Fed and this administration have reaped on top of the country, and you know, bombing the world, spreading democracy is turning more and more countries away from U.S. dollar and U.S. influence, and that's one of the parts of his talk was about BRICS, you know, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South America, and the other 20, 30 countries that are part of the BRICS nation or financial agreement pact, which represent at least half the population of the world, not quite half the total wealth of the world, but give China a couple more years and it will be. And they're already developing exchanges and currencies and trade currencies and pooling money for loans and things like that. So there are people are no longer – the key thing is in the beginning when he talked about – you know, her primary question when she opened the show was about, he goes, you know, the U.S. dollar is not backed by anything. Then he goes, well, it's backed by one thing, confidence. Well, there's your problem, because nobody's confident in it anymore. People are gaming the system. I think the investors are, you know, building up their portfolios as fast as they humanly can with the intent that, you know, when it all crashes, I'll try to keep as much as I can of what I stole and manipulated and traded, and we got a couple $1 trillion still sitting overseas that corporations won't bring into this country, you know, because they don't want to pay the taxes on it. So I think one of the big problems with this economic cycle we're in is not that we don't have the ability to get out of it,
It's just that nobody's confident that the federal government is going to get the hell out of the way and allow the markets to work and give back that confidence to the dollar. And I think it's not just here, it's all over the world. That's where I spend a good chunk of my research time. And I see more and more and more countries just going, we don't want anything to do with their problems because we have to protect our country, our people, and we can no longer trust the Americans because they're freaking nuts and their politicians are all crooks. And the Federal Reserve is, you know, leveraged 80 to 1, where, you know, the IMF is 3 to 1, what he said. And 80 to 1 is a lot more nasty and scary than 3 to 1. So I think a lot of people are just, you know, whether or not people like the U.S. or don't like the U.S. is not the point. I think people are going, crap, you know, we just had a terrible crash in 2007-08. And the U.S., who's the leader in 70% or 60% now of the world trade dollar, we're down 10 points, that they're not making good decisions, and that steals our confidence. And so people are starting to figure out how they're going to survive, you know, the next 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years, you know, and that's where we're at. And I also think that you're facing that in terms of not just economics, but in terms of just government attitude. You know, what are we at? 8%, you know, believe that Congress is, you know, fair and equitable and trying to do the right job. That's not a good number. You know, Obama, they keep saying he's around 38%. I think that's a lie, personally, you know, because he's destroying everything. And he looks like a buffoon around the world in world affairs. You know, he just keeps stumbling all over himself. And so I would imagine he's more like 25%, and they're just flat-ass lying because they're afraid that if people get the real number of what they think of the President of the United States, I mean, Congress sucks, how people view Congress, it's bad. And that's that image concept that gives you the confidence to say, I want to start a new business, I want to move, I want to, you know, I want to go make more money. Well, why would I want to make 20 grand more if they're going to steal 3/4 of it because of this new tax code? You know, and then there's Obamacare looming over the top of everything on top of it. So, you know, everybody's just stalled right now. Lack of confidence, and it's not just the dollar. It's the whole damn country. So here we are, 2014. There's some decent people running. They need your help. And there's some really shitty people running who need to get ousted. And like you, you know, I'm kind of 6 1/2 half dozen the other, but, you know, well, yeah, but what if a Democrat gets that guy's spot? Well, what the hell? Some of these guys are worse than Democrats, so who gives a crap? You know, they can only destroy the country so much more before it all, you know, has a major hiccup. And so, whatever. We've got to get honest, constitutional, economically sound people in that Congress and who will hold Holder and the president accountable, or we're screwed. I mean, not to be too fatalistic, but it's pretty bad. I don't know if anybody else notices it, but I do.
That's always bad. I mean, that's, you know, I think that we've grown so soft. You know, yeah, you notice it, and I notice it. We talk about it all the time, and our audience knows it, notices it. The issue is you got to get it out to everybody else. Because you need to create a force multiplier and get people involved. But, yeah, it's bad. It's really bad because we're 40-some years into this fiat paper scheme, and that's far more dangerous than when it was only 10 years in. But
thank you, Nixon.
That's the nature of government. It's going to keep growing. Now, that doesn't mean that government is bad. You know, one of the things Reagan always said was, you know, government isn't the solution, it's the problem. Well, yeah, but he also explained that, and he kind of qualified it. And the fact is that government in and of itself is not bad. In fact, it is absolutely necessary. It is a part of society. We have certain functions that do require a certain amount of coercion, but there has to be checks on that. It needs to exist, and it is a good thing to have. If you understand human nature, you can't have no government. There's always some kind of government, whether it's formally set up or just simply whoever has the biggest club, there's always some form of government.
Trog.
The government that we have, yeah, is supposed to be restrained, and the system that the Founding Fathers devised was so ingenious because it used one center of power against another center of power. So you've got all the different states, and you've got the federal government, and they have certain responsibilities and dual sovereignty in certain areas, and some Republican features and some Democrat features, and I'm talking about small r's and small d's, not the parties. And then the separation of powers across the branches, and there's always a little ebb and flow between these things. It's messy. Liberty is messy. If you want absolute order, then you want totalitarianism. You want them to control everything and tell you what to do and where to go and give you your choices amongst, you know, two or three things that they've offered you, and you get to pick one of those, and you feel, well, excellent, this is great. I get to pick the next asshole that's going to govern me. Fantastic. But he's going to do the same thing as the other guy. So if you want liberty, then you have to take the responsibility that you have to be part of that ballast against power. You can whine about it, you can complain about it, you can become an anarchic rebel about it, or you can work within the system that we have to correct the problem. And that's exactly what every single one of us has to do, and it isn't just about voting. It's far more than that. But if you don't get more people who think properly about the Constitution, about power, about our culture, about what the right things to do are, then they're going to be the minority of the minority, and they're going to be vocal, and they're going to do what they're going to do, but they're not going to be effective, and that's the problem. Remember that Obamacare was initially supposed to be repealed. Then it was just supposed to be defunded. And then finally we settled on a compromise of just delay it. But who crushed that? That's right. The Republicans destroyed the conservative Senate's initiative and the conservative House's initiative to just delay Obamacare. The Republican leadership crushed that, caved in and handed everything that Reid and Obama wanted. And then, of course, since then, Obama and Reid, well, not Reid, actually, just Obama has single-handedly done that very thing on delaying parts of it. And then, of course, Sebelius quits. Oh, we got 7.1 million people and all that crap. That's what happened. It is such a powerful force now. It has grown so large that you have to put people in there who are willing to restrain it from the inside. As you put people in the state level, and at the state level it could be independents, Constitution Party, Libertarian, whatever your best choice is, put that person in there. But at the federal level, it's just a Democrat or a Republican, and you got no shot with the Democrats. It's just that simple. For Libertarians, Republicans, Conservatives, anybody on the, quote, right side of the political spectrum, you got no shot with the Democrats. The Republicans are your only shot. So, you know, that's the tough nuts. That's the sucky situation. Curl up in a ball and cry about it, or get off your ass and do something about it. And, of course, if you're listening to the show, and thank you for sharing the show and getting it out there. Remember, nobody knows the show exists unless you tell them, and we appreciate everybody sharing it. And you can share it after we air. Just go to blogtalkradio.com. Search out Liberty's Thunder. All the shows are right there. On Facebook, we're at Liberty's Thunder, and Chris's group is Liberty's Talk. So make sure you get us on Facebook as well and participate and get the word out there. And the most important thing to do is get people active and involved. And speaking of active and involved, Joseph, you are live with Rex and Trog.
Thanks, Rex. I agree with you. Liberty and freedom comes at a price, comes at a very high price if we truly seek liberty and freedom. I wanted to talk about two separate issues. First, about the midterm elections that's coming up. That's very crucial. Out of the 35 Senate seats that are up for election, 21 are currently held by Democrats and 14 are held by Republicans. So actually, the Democrats have more seats to defend than the Republicans do. So the Republicans have better chances of winning back the Senate if they stick on if they stick on their messaging successfully, hopefully they can stay together, stay on board with the conservatives that are running, and keep on attacking Obamacare. I think they will have a very good chance of this time getting the six seats they need in the Senate. And also about Jeb Bush. When I heard him speaking the other day about immigration, it's almost laughable. I don't think he's a serious contender, and I think based on the statements that he's stating about immigration, I think he's doing that intentionally so that he or the GOP establishment will not favor him in running in 2016, because if you really dissect what he's saying about immigration, those comments are basically going to alienate the conservative base, even the GOP establishment base, and the independence that he would need to be a viable contender in the 2016 primaries. I mean, Rick Perry got hell when he made that statement about immigration and during the 2012 primaries, when he said that you don't have a heart if you're not sympathetic towards legal immigrants and them receiving federal or state aid. Be honest, compared to what Jeb Bush said, Rick Perry sounds and looks like a saint. So that's why I don't know what you think, Rex, but I honestly think he's intentionally making these statements so that no one will ask him or no one will even consider him running in 2016.
Well,
what do you think, Rex?
I mean, look, you never really know what these guys are up to. I mean, I think this is the fundamental problem. That could very well be it. The issue is that, look, this is how it works with the CLEC, and then what Pat Goodell called the consultant lobbyist establishment complex that basically runs the RNC. They usually use whose turn is it to be the next nominee, or, you know, if there's any kind of backlash from, you know, these crazy movement conservatives and these grassroots psychos and these Tea Party wing nuts and these libertarian, you know, throwbacks and all this kind of stuff. They'll try to give you two choices where one is less bad than the other and convince you that that one's the conservative. So, you know, whether it's Christie or Jeb Bush or whoever they're going to use as the tactic, the problem is that it's always deceit. It is always deceit because what they don't want is to lose their corporate funding gravy train. And because of the way the government has expanded, it is involved in everything so that every time that a law is passed now, because, you know, who cares what the Constitution says? We'll just pass the law and sign the law, and then we'll figure maybe the Supreme Court will have to make a decision on it, and then we'll rewrite it, and it'll be just as bad, and no one will know any better. So every law, every piece of legislation has winners and victims. There's no benefit. There's no doing their job. It's winners and victims. So what happens is if you have a little bit more than two pennies, you have to come down on one side or the other. So you have to pay them sort of, you know, for either granting you a privilege over everybody else, or you have to pay them protection money to not pass laws that are going to screw with you. That's kind of how it works, and they like it that way. So what they don't want, what they want to ensure at all costs, and it's not out of loyalty or love for the Bushes or hey, you know what, Romney almost made it, it's kind of, we got to give him a shot. There's not, none of that. What they absolutely do not want is somebody who means what they say, like Ronald Reagan or Rand Paul or Ted Cruz or Mike Lee, because that would mess things up for them dramatically. Reagan did a lot of damage to this stuff for them. They hated it. Now they packed his administration with neocons and rhinos, and they even gave him, you know, forced him to take George H.W. Bush as his vice president, who basically called supply-side economics voodoo economics. They cannot end the game. All they want to do is professional wrestling, where, you know, they pretend that they're standing against the other guys because the other guys are bad, and then they do the same things, only slightly tweak it as to who they favor. So Jeb Bush would be a perfect tool for them. Mitt Romney would be a perfect tool for them. There's plenty of – Chris Christie would probably be another perfect tool for them. They don't care which one it is as long as it's one who's going to do their bidding, just like Obama. But they don't want any change agents. They don't want anybody who's got conviction. And that's why they do things like this whole Bundy Ranch thing. This isn't about Bundy. This isn't about his cattle. It's not about a turtle. This is about scaring the crap out of the rest of us so that we don't mess with the federal government. That's what it's about. It's about intimidation. Sorry,
yeah,
I went off there.
Very scary. And also I wanted to just say a few comments about the Clive Bundy situation. It's turned into such a scary, turbulent situation. I'm almost afraid to turn on the news because I know that the end result is not gonna end well. But that brings me up to an event that's coming up in May, American Spring, and my fear is, based on what's happening right now with the Clive Bundy situation, I pray that American Spring does not turn into a violent demonstration, as some people or proponents are, some people are talking about going there, not in peaceful demonstration, but to use violence. And I hope they don't use the Clive Bundy situation as a scapegoat to justify the means of doing that. Because if that happens, I'm afraid, Rex, all hell is going to break loose. And I don't know. It's just becoming a more scary, unpredictable situation as day by day goes by. And, go ahead, Rex.
Well, our government is masters at infiltrating protests and creating situations where everything goes to hell so that you can use the military or the police or topple a government. I mean, shit, we're masters at that. We've been doing this since the Cold War, you know, and all those mechanisms are just, you know, 30, 40, 50 years more refined. So that's the only thing, that's what you have to worry about is infiltration and people who, you know, want to trigger an event and take a peaceful situation and turn it into something violent. I mean, that's perfect, you know.
Yeah,
that's right up the CIA's job, baby.
Yeah, I wasn't born in the Vietnam era, but turning on the news, it kind of reminds me of the past of Vietnam and how those protests turned into deadly protests and all the violence. And
funded by the KGB. Now that was funded. Yeah. Look, so that anti-war movement, that was funded by the KGB. The nuclear freeze movement in the 80s, trying to derail the negotiations that Reagan was pushing for, again, Moscow funded that. Well, not totally, but, you know, because remember something, communists, whether they're in Belize or Washington, D.C., or, you know, right. Moscow, doesn't really matter. They tend to fund the same types of things. But, the first thing that I would say about that, Joseph, is what idiot came up with the name for this thing? American Spring. First of all, it sounds like a bad soap. And second of all, it has echoes of the Arab Spring that turned out to be so wonderful. Democracy spreading all across. Oh, wait a minute. It was jihadism was spreading all across the Arab world. So, I mean, but the simple fact is that the First Amendment gives us the right to free association, to assemble, and to petition government for the redress of grievances. Are people going to use this Bundy thing? Let's be clear about something. Most of the time, when the federal government picks a flashpoint to use, even if they execute it poorly like Janet Reno did in Waco, they always pick something that is nearly indefensible to make it difficult to defend the position. You know, I don't know if David Koresh was or was not a pedophile, but he was certainly up to something fishy. And I don't want to be in a position of defending David Koresh and the Branch Davidians. But what Janet Reno did was unacceptable. But you see how they make that difficult? Same with Ruby Ridge. I mean, I think Randy Weaver seems to be kind of a little bit of a nutcase. There was no reason to snipe him. And Bundy has a very tenuous claim to what he's talking about. He's saying his family's had, you know, their cattle there since 1880. Well, Nevada became a state in 1864, and that was federal land beforehand because in 1848 the U.S. government got that from Mexico, and then Nevada in their constitution actually handed it over to the feds. Now, just because the state decides to hand something over to the feds does not mean the feds have a right to it, because the federal government is limited in what it can do with land within the United States. And I don't know that this is, who has the right stand, but see, that's the problem. We don't have a cohesive system of figuring these things out, because we always allow federal law to trump. And that really doesn't mean law. It just means power. If the federal government can do it, they will do it, and we'll accept that as legal whether it is or isn't.
Abuse,
and then what happens is that, yeah, and that engenders from people a reaction. And when we go to that far extreme, and I'm not saying that it's absolutely inappropriate, if you let this thing slip much longer, the only people who will be able to resist will be people who will resort to violence. That's just the way that human nature is. But we don't want to go there for two reasons. One, you're likely to lose. The federal government has a shitload more firepower than any private group. So, it's over. And then two, that is going to require a massive rebuilding effort after we win this battle against the federal government. That's just silly. This Wolverine, Red Dawn scenario, give me a break. That's not going to happen. The issue is that people are allowing the soft despotism to take over their lives, and they're giving the federal government power that it doesn't have.
and you can take that back. If enough of us are actually aware of what it means to self-govern, and we govern ourselves, and we have local rule and local associations and local groups and local communities, the federal government becomes weaker, especially when it goes bust, like Rickert said, because the Federal Reserve is at the end of its scheme. And the SDR is not going to be funding this federal government at the rate that the Federal Reserve has. This is not going to happen. There's going to be better places for them to dump their money. So the fight, the real battle, is happening now, not just at the ballot box, because we know that those machines are rigged, but they can only rig close elections, which is why the elections have been getting closer and closer. In 2000, Roe's strategy was to have the Supreme Court give George Bush the electoral votes, even though he didn't have the popular vote. I don't know if that's true or not. It was very close. But why is it close? It's because turnout has been dropping, and less people participate. And of those people who do participate, most of them don't participate until a couple of days before the election. That's where we're losing. That's what grassroots activism is about. Let's go to Chris.
Yeah, I agree with you, Rex. People better wake up quickly. And you know what my fear is, Rex? Is I don't see the sense of urgency in enough people. And what I don't understand is I see America as the Titanic heading for an iceberg really quickly. And my fear is not enough people on the ship are feeling that sense of urgency. And if they don't wake up now, when are they going to wake up? That's my fear, Rex. If they don't wake up now, when they know that they're on a collision towards an iceberg, I don't even know if they'll ever wake up with enough time. But
some of them won't.
I just don't see that sense of urgency, Rex.
Welfare, food stamps, disability all go away, they'll wake up.
Yeah. Yeah, very few patriots like you who are out there trying to do everything in their power, you feel the sense of urgency because you know what's at stake. But not enough people feel the sense of urgency. I feel the sense of urgency and the uncertainty, but not enough people are waking up, and they're not waking up.
Well, American Idol's on. It's spring. It's time to barbecue and work on your yard, and baseball starting, and you know, reality TV, new shows coming up, and Game of Thrones. There's a lot of important things going on out there.
Freedom and liberty comes at a price, and my fear is if we lose it as a country, we're not getting it back. It's going to be the point of no return. 220 years is going to go down the drain, and that's what people don't realize. They don't realize the reality is once we lose it, there's no turning around. It's going to be the point of no return. We'll either wind up going bankrupt and everything will collapse because we cannot sustain this large deficit that we've never had in 220 years of being a sovereign country. And that's the urgency.
Yep.
People are not realizing. They somehow live in this facade that, at the last second, you know, they can tweak things and get someone elected and fix it and just turn it around like that.
Sure, Joseph, because that's what's happened in the past. And the simple fact is when you're comfortable, and let's face it, the poorest people in America are mm-hmm. way more comfortable than most of the people on this planet. So when you're comfortable, you don't really have a particular urgency to do anything about it. And that's why it's the Tocqueville called it, and this is a Frenchman who came to see how democracy worked in America because he was hoping to teach his countrymen in France back home how they can apply some of these things. Remember something, that every system that's created is created for a specific people at a specific time. So the French are different, but he wanted to kind of see more of a raw creation because we are, quote, a new country. We weren't built on old institutions, although that's not really true. We were built on age-old Anglo-Saxon institutions and Western civilization, but we were kind of a new raw country. And he came here in the 1830s when he was writing about democracy, and this is I'm talking about Volume 2. He called it soft despotism, and it's soft because it doesn't have to get in your face like it's doing with Bundy. Because you'll allow it, you know, as long as they let you be happy. You know, they give you your choices of entertainment, and you're fairly well fed, and, you know, you get some modest health care until you're, you know, way late in age and
or you know, inconvenient. But for the most part, you know, most people will just get along just fine. It's kind of like that dull existence of an animal in a yoke. And people like that because they're soft and they're weak and they're lazy. And there's always been those people. Those people were here from before the Republic was founded. It doesn't take them to fix the problem. They get swept along with whatever we fix. And so will we lose it forever? Maybe, maybe not. But if we lose it, it'll be several generations that'll have to get it back, and it won't be pretty. So what you have to really do, how do you create a sense of urgency for people? You tell them the truth. You let them know that soft slavery is still slavery. And right off the bat, someone who's not seeing this stuff and it's just their first experience with it, A, isn't going to believe that there is anything really going on in the Republican Party other than these Tea Party and libertarian infiltrators. Explain to them the situation. Let them know what happened in Tampa. And in case anybody doesn't remember what happened in Tampa, Romney recently admitted to it. They stole the election. They had to steal the election because they didn't have enough delegates, and they had to change the rules. And that kind of behavior is unacceptable because, I mean, if your guy's the legitimate guy, why are you stealing the election? You know, that's the kind of stuff they have to learn. And they have to learn why Rand Paul is not a dangerous isolationist who's going to get us, you know, to die. I mean, look, John Boehner, the alleged Speaker of the House, I guess he is the Speaker of the House, but he doesn't speak much other than when he's got, you know, a drooling whiskey breath and going to the tan booth and giving the Democrats more stuff that they want and maybe getting around to golf with Obama. He got up at the convention.
Without objection, the previous question is ordered. The question is on the adoption of the resolution. All those in favor signify by saying aye. All those opposed, no. Any other chair, the ayes have it. The resolution is adopted. Without objection, the motion to reconsider is laid on the table.
Did that sound like there was no objection? Because it sounded like a room full of people objecting, and it only takes one person to make an objection before, according to Robert's rules, that you have to address it. They ran through a rule that basically makes it impossible for grassroots to have a say-so in the nominee. And well, Rex, you keep talking to me about 2014. Why are you bringing up 2016? Because 2016 is being defined by 2014, and in 2016, all the down-ballot seats are affected by the top of the ticket. The reason the Republicans don't currently have the Senate is because they didn't get the White House. The reason they didn't get the White House is not because Barack Obama won, but because Mitt Romney lost. There's a difference, because Barack Obama got less votes in 12 than he did in 08. But he still won because Romney lost, because Romney doesn't appeal to people who he says he's representing. See, that's the problem. The conservatives, we smell a lie if we're aware. And the rhinos talk conservative and legislate progressive. The Democrats talk Democrat and legislate progressive, which is exactly the same thing. That's why they get elected. So when they lie to people, people get offended by it. They stop showing up. 114 million people didn't show up. Our job is to get those people. And if we could just increase turnout by 2 or 3%, we can change the mix and change the dynamic. We've seen it before. The 70s sucked. And the rhinos there, I mean, let me remember something. Nixon, he gave you the China deal. He gave you OSHA. He gave you the EPA. All sorts of crazy shit was done under Kissinger and Nixon, just like Bush and Rove and Cheney, right? But 1980 was different. Reagan was there. Was it perfect? Was it great? Was it the, you know, conservative moment? No, there were some problems, but he got more done that the establishment hated. 94 was another example. 2010 was another example. We can always do it, but it requires more work and not being let down by the defeats we've had, because every defeat is one moment closer to that victory. Chris, you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I agree. All of it, both of you. Sorry, I'm going through doors. You know, I think that what Joseph was saying was, you know, we'll never get it back. We'll get it back because there's always been a battle between, you know, freedom and,
tyrannical governments and dictators and crazy people, you know, Pol Pot and Stalin and everything else like that, and Hitler and all the rest of them. But the challenge is, you know, will you live to see it get gotten back, or is it going to be future generations, you know, that finally have enough? And it's going to be bloody. You know, if the totalitarian communist mindset takes over this country, first of all, I don't think it's going to happen. I think that either we will vote in the right people and start to make a shift and adjustment and changes, but if it does happen, there's going to be, you know, still a third of this country has a brain, you know, and they understand basic freedoms and things like that. And the next generation is just struggling like hell, and they have no hope for the future. So there's frustrated people all the way around. You know, so it's hard to say how it will pan out if it hits the worst of the worst. I think the soft despotism strategy, which is really good in that video that you posted, Rex, you know, talking about that concept, you know, that's what you do is, you know, you bribe people, you pay them, you pay people not to work, you pay them to, you know, have a sore toe, you know, you give them shit, and then they roll over and they vote for you. I mean, that's really the true evil. You know, if a guy comes to your country to overthrow it, you know who the enemy is. But when they give you free shit for voting for them, you know, who's the enemy? They give me free stuff. They helped me. They gave me health care. They gave me, you know, when I was down and out, and look at the student loan I got. I never could have got an education without it. You know, so you gradually, generation by generation, buy into this crap. And there are less of us, I think, that really get freedom, you know, that lived it and experienced it and have enough maturity or age on us, you know, to have lived in a different America. But there's a whole bunch of people who think that the government's there for a reason and it's there to help. And it's pretty insane, and it's sad, and it's evil, and all that kind of wonderful stuff, but it's the truth. So where that battle, you know, whether it's a battle of ideas and it's a battle of politics, or it goes to hell and turns into a bloody battle, I can't predict that. But something needs to change, and it won't change unless people wake up, because, and I actually wrote a short article about this today. It's not politicians that bother me, because anybody wants to be a politician already, you know, unless they're just a total I want to save the world kind, like Ron Paul, you know, they got a little bit of hustle and crookedness in them, and they're susceptible to the coercion and the wealth creation and those types of things that can be done by not standing on principle. And so I understand, you know, and it's one of the reasons I've always told people, don't give me the Obama news of the day. He's just a puppet, you know, for the same people who controlled Bush. So, you know, I'm just not into that Obama this, Obama that, Obama this, Obama that, because he's not the problem. He is the, you know, the perpetuation, you know, of a deeper problem in our country. That's why he's in power, but he's not really in power. So if you focus on him all the time, you solve nothing, and you don't understand the bigger problem that we talk about all the time. And that is, you've got to fix, number one, the heart of Americans and critical thinking and getting people to understand freedom and responsibility. Because here's the key thing. We've talked about this before. You know, we are really good at defining our rights, and the left uses it all the time to push their agenda. But in reality, you know, more than rights, it was responsibility that defined this country. Individual responsibility, you know, self-awareness, self-reliance, you know. And I heard about somebody had I can't remember the state, but they had a little, you know, mini disaster, and FEMA tried to come in there, and they told them, get the hell out. We don't need your help. That, to me, is an American ideal. When you need help, you receive it willingly. But we've just become so dependent on every facet of the federal government, right down to, you know, thinking that a policeman's job is to protect you. Well, it ain't. And the Supreme Court said it isn't. They don't have to put their life on the line for you. And so, you know, we've got this mindset that society and government's there for jobs, the good of things. Yeah, jobs, everything else. And it's not. And to control the economy and to manage the economy? Are you freaking insane? You know, the Fed hasn't managed anything except debt, you know, and screwing the country. So, you know, it's that whole mindset. It's getting people to wake up to common sense ideas and then having the fortitude to shut off the damn TV, to quit watching faux news, you know, and listening to their bull crap because they're just as bad as the rest of them, except that they have a few conservatives on there. So you think they care about Christians and conservatives. They don't give a shit about that. Few of them do. But, you know, you get sucked in and then you start listening to them. That's the mistake. The
well,
key is that you... Yeah, well, they got a few okay people, like I said. But you've got to pick and choose. You can't just take them at face value. They gave us Romney. You know, I mean, come on.
What?
I was, yeah.
They tried to give us more Syria. They
yeah.
gave us a new Cold War.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I mean. So, but that's what I'm saying is you've got to choose your sources of information better. And I would say alternative media is about the only place you can go to get the truth. And then you got to watch them too because people are people. And that's the thing. I don't know why it is that Americans have become such a society of worshiping people who have a platform, whether it's a movie star or a musician or a you know, a commentator on a news
cult.
Channel. It's a cult. Yeah, it's a cult of personality. And this country is just, it's just sold into that. And you know, and it's sad because it's a sickness. And I wish people would, you know, spend more time worrying about what God thinks of them than some frickin' movie star or some a-hole that doesn't give a crap about you unless you buy their CD. I mean, it's just insanity, but that's how we live in this country today.
Yeah,
so
okay.
There we are, you know, here, you know, you showed up and here we are. And this is the point. I think 2014 is so important. And as it pans out and what happens and the people we put in power and the people who don't get removed from power. Now, I'm talking about Democrats. That's a given. You want to replace them everywhere you can, period, in the report. Most of them are socialists or communists. And that's simple. But I'm talking about the a-holes in the Republican Party who are no better than a progressive Democrat who have the same voting record agenda. Well, they're worse because you think because they have an R by their name that you can trust them, and you can't.
They're in your tent.
So that's the key that we need to really get. If we don't get this, then I'll start worrying.
Yeah, we got to get more people to get it. And speaking of getting, we're – getting ready to get out of here. So, Joseph, you want to give us your final thoughts? And thanks for calling in.
No, thanks for having me on the show. My greatest concern is when I was referring to if Americans don't start to wake up now and act with a sense of urgency and, you know, the point of no return is, and I pray that you're right, Rex, I really do, is that I'm afraid that America is on the verge of going bankrupt. And that's why in our 220-year history, we've had many crises and we've rebounded, but we've never been in a situation like this where we've been in so much debt. And my fear is it's not sustainable for much longer. And that's what I meant by that's my fear of the point of no return, that we become Greece. We actually go bankrupt if we don't turn things around fiscally. And that's my concern.
All right. Well, we appreciate it. We appreciate you calling in and getting the show out there and sharing all the stuff that we put on the page. And happy Easter, as I won't be talking to you before then. And thanks for calling in, Joseph.
Thanks.
Yeah, are we going broke? No, we're already broke. So it's kind of a moot point. Have we been here before? To a degree, it's probably not been this bad, at least financially speaking. But look, the real truth of the matter is I think that every man who inked his name to the Constitution for these United States would be surprised as shit that we made it this far. It's actually unbelievable and almost unheard of in human history to run self-governance for more or less, you know, two and a quarter centuries. I mean, that is an amazing accomplishment. That doesn't mean we should pat ourselves on the back for having done it and call it a day.
you know, try to outdo yourselves. Maybe another 2 1/4 centuries would be a good idea to give it a shot for. But people are not going to feel that urgency until they actually hurt. And usually by then it is too late, and it requires a bigger effort to rebuild, which is why you got to get them now. You got to reach out to them now. You've got to make them understand why this is bad, not just as an issue of utility. See, that's the problem. All the arguments with utility and efficiency and effectiveness is basically how the Republicans get to get away with what they get away with, because they simply tell you, well, we're going to do the same things that the Democrats are doing. You know, we're going to give you all these freebies and all this money. We're going to send all the military overseas to keep you safe and fight for liberty, but we're going to do it better because we're going to be more efficient about it. Well, how about making the moral argument that you're a sovereign human being? You have dignity that's inherent into who you are. Quit being such a namby-pamby little sissy who has the government for a mother. And I don't care if it's a Republican mother or a Democratic mother. Every one of us has got a mother. We don't need the government to be our mother. Chris, let's go to you for final thoughts, and then we'll get out of here, and I'm going to close with a little bit of, I think, Reagan, Rand, and maybe some Mike Lee and Ted in there.
Remember Liar, Liar when he was in the elevator? Mama.
It was me!
Anyway. Anyway, yeah, Joseph is a great guy. In case you're still listening, Joseph, you're a good guy with a good heart. It's obvious. It's just apparent. But, yeah, I already flapped my jaw pretty hard today. And I didn't rant as hard as I did last week coming into the show. I kind of tempered myself. Maybe it's the hole in the concrete work I was doing. But we are at a point where people need to wake up. We are at a point where people needed to wake up a long time ago. And 9/11, regardless of how you think or why you think it happened. And it's what the government did afterwards that was the criminal thing, because everybody in power said, hey, look what we can do. They're all scared to death. And when you live in fear and you allow government to tell you they will keep you safe, then you have basically given up your rights. This started a long time ago. It started a lot longer before than that, but 9/11 was definitely a turning point in this country. And the fact that people still go through the TSA and haven't demanded change, and the abuses that they put up with, that is the sheepifying of America to the nth degree. And that just, if you want to look at, you know, how our population thinks, you know, it's just like the whole issue with the NSA. Well, if you're not doing anything wrong, who cares if they're spying on you? You should, because why in the hell are they spying on you is the first question. Second question is, why are you such an idiot that you don't think it matters? Because you're sheep. You know, you have no concept. You have no integrity. You have no pride in yourself as a human being, you know, that says, you know, this is my property, my home. You can't walk through my frickin' door without my permission. Period. End of report. I'm in America. This is America. If you don't get that, then you got problems. And there's a lot of people who don't get that. And so, you know, it is definitely a wake-up call, Rex. And I guess we are a little bit of soothsayer, a little bit of fortune tellers, a little bit of reality check, a little bit of reporting on current affairs. But our underlying theme is wake the hell up before it's too late. And I don't know what that too late's going to be. I don't know what it's going to look like. I don't know what is going to happen. But I guarantee you there's some stuff coming, and there's some corrections to be are going to have to be made. You can't run a country like this for as long as we have. And there's corrections coming. How bad they get, I don't know. And the best people in the world that I study and listen to and read, you know, they're hesitant. I think they would have a personal opinion if you talked to them one-on-one around a campfire. You know, in the public, I don't think they want to, you know, shock the shit out of the world about what they think is really coming. But can it be corrected? Sure, if enough people wake up. Otherwise, you think the government's going to give up all this power on its own? Are you crazy? Power, baby. It's the aphrodisiac of the 21st century. You know, so that's my close. Wake the hell up and do something.
And Trog has a big club, so you'd better listen up. And here's the interesting thing. All right, you got to wake up, which means be aware that there is a problem, identify what that problem is, and then figure out what the solution is, and then take action. That's nothing else is going to happen. If you don't know what the problem is, then you don't know what you're fixing. If you don't have a solution, you don't know how to fix the problem. And if you don't take action, then whether you know the problem and you have a solution, doesn't matter because nothing got done. So work your ass off. That's what you have to do. Work smart, work hard, get other people involved. We need a force multiplier. But the most important aspect of it is, what are you fighting for? For liberty. You better learn what that is. Liberty isn't freedom to do whatever the F you want to do. Because if we were all doing that, it would be chaos. Liberty is that is you have the right to choose your own path in life without crossing and diminishing other people's paths in life. And that does mean that the rights we have are not absolute, and we do live together, and we got to work it out. Liberty is simple. Living it is messy, and it will lead to conflict. The problem is when that conflict is between paleocons, neocons, Christian cons, voluntarists, ANCAPs, libertarians, what have you, we're losing. We're divided, and the collectivists and the statists and those who want the big nanny state to take care of them by ripping you off will beat us. They're a monolith. They're united on this. We're not. Why? Because we actually think, because conservatism and libertarianism engender diversity and individualism. And the other side of the equation is collectivism. They're a hive mind, and they're coming at us. And we are running around beating each other up. And that this goes for you ANCAPs out there. Your ANCAP fantasy is not going to happen with the Democrats and the rhinos and the progressives in power. Now, let's be clear. It's not going to happen when conservatives and libertarians are in power either. But you got more of a shot. Now, we're going to argue about that. We're going to have fights about that. But right now, we're on the same side of the coin. Because everything is going to be gone if we don't work together. So I don't care what part of the spectrum you find yourself in or what you like to label yourself. We have to work together to restore a constitutionally restrained federal government and empower the states and the individual people and the local communities and intermediary institutions. This is important because culturally, we might have very different notions of liberty. You know, people up in New Hampshire and New England are going to have one notion. Down south, there's going to be another notion. Out west, with the expansive land that they've got, they got a little bit of a different idea. The whole point is, each one of us in our community, in our state, in our locality, is supposed to live it the way that we want, the way that we want to order it together, without having Washington, D.C. standardize it and cater to the lowest common denominator. When you regulate something to that degree in that much detail, you bring everything down. Nothing gets better. And I mean, like Joseph was saying, 2 1/4 centuries, hey, I think it's pretty amazing we made it this far. I doubt that Alexis de Tocqueville thought we'd make it this far. In fact, I'm going to close by reading from him. And this is from Democracy Too, I believe. He writes, and this is on the idea of soft despotism, which he really didn't have much language to use, and remember, these are translated from the French to English, but he decided to describe it. An innumerable multitude of men alike and equal who turn about without repose in order to procure for themselves petty and vulgar pleasures with which they fill their souls, each of them withdrawn apart, is a virtual stranger, unaware of the fate of the others, his children and his particular friends formed for him the entirety of the human race. As for his fellow citizens, he is beside them, but he sees them not. He touches them, and he senses them not. He exists only in himself and for himself alone. And if he still has a family, one could say at least that he no longer has a fatherland. Over these is elevated an immense tutelary power, which takes sole charge of assuring their enjoyment and of watching over their fate. It is absolute, attentive to detail, regular, provident, and gentle. It would resemble the paternal power if, like that power, it had its object to prepare men for manhood. But it seeks to the contrary, to keep them irrevocably fixed in childhood. It loves the fact that the citizens enjoy themselves, provided that they dream solely of their own enjoyment. It works willingly for their happiness, but it wishes to be the only agent and the sole arbiter of that happiness. It provides for their security, foresees and supplies their needs, guides them in the principal affairs, directs their industry, regulates their testaments, divides their inheritances. Can it not relieve them entirely of the trouble of thinking and of the effort associated with living? In this fashion, every day it renders the employment of free will less useful and more rare. It confines the action of the will within a smaller sphere, and bit by bit it steals from each citizen the use of that which is his own. Equality has prepared men for all of these things. It has disposed them to put up with them and often to regard them as a benefit. This is where we're headed. This is our future. Actually, for those of us who resist, it's not our future. We're going to disappear in the middle of the night. But this is the future of America. This is the legacy that we'll be leaving. Generations will look back. Actually, generations from now, they won't look back. They won't even think that far back. They will only be concerned with their immediate moment, and they won't care about what we did. We would have just thrown it away. Generations of liberty will never exist because of what we do. But liberty is a human good. It's a gift that we have that comes with responsibilities and is always in need of defense. You must always guard it and protect it, and not so much for yourself. You have to guard it and protect it for your fellow citizens. Because if you're only concerned about your liberty, they'll take it from you. But if we are each concerned about the other's liberty, then together we'll roll the tide back. And yeah, it seems dark. It seems practically impossible. Ted Cruz and Rand Paul and Mike Lee, they make some nice flowery speeches. They've tried some legislative initiatives, but so far hasn't gone anywhere because Boehner and McConnell and Reid shut them down, and Obama just writes executive orders and his departments just regulate things without passing them as law. So it's really bad. It's horrible, in fact. But you can turn it around right quick. We have the capacity to turn things this way and that way almost at the drop of the hat. Just think of it this way. And for those of you who are not Christians, accept this as just a fable or a story that has lessons you can draw from it. And for those of you who are Christians, it's probably the most important moment of your belief. Today we celebrate Palm Sunday. This is when Jesus came into Jerusalem and was received by her inhabitants as a king, hailed as a hero, Hosanna to the Son of David. By Friday, they released a violent revolutionary instead of Jesus, shouted, "Crucify him," handed him over to the Romans to be tortured and killed in the manner of a slave in the lowest form of punishment the Roman Empire had. In less than a week, between Sunday and Friday, that's what we did. You can turn it around the other way. The thing to remember is, and I'm looking at my calendar right now, today's Palm Sunday, this Friday is Good Friday. It's like the whole defeat of the entire Christ movement, right? Here's your leader, here's your God, he's dead, right? Can you think of anything more dark than creatures murdering their own creator? It was such a shameful act that the sun hid. I think we have some kind of lunar eclipse tonight, so it's kind of interesting. But the sun hid from sight because creatures killed their own creator. Nothing can be darker than that. Yet Easter Sunday is the triumph. And on my calendar, Good Friday always comes before Easter Sunday. And when I wake up in the morning, I've noticed it's always darkest before dawn. This is just part of the rhythm of the reality we live in. And if it's dark now, if we've got a balance sheet that's leveraged 80 to 1, if forces around the globe are looking to pull away from our fiat scheme and plunge us into darkness, if there are cyber attacks against our systems, and an open border because we use all of our resources to either ship illegal guns to Mexican drug cartels or bring the you know force of hell down on one guy because he's possibly illegally grazing in a field in Nevada? That's pretty dark. It's actually a really shitty situation. You got two choices. Accept it, bow down in defeat right now, never look up again, never grab your dignity, never maintain your liberty. Or stand up and fight and get others to fight with you, to take every action we can take to restore our Constitution, to reform our culture, and to bring sanity and a sense of duty and rights to liberty back to the American shores. We can do that. And maybe we'll win. Maybe we won't. But wouldn't you rather know that you lived your life in dignity, in liberty, or at least fighting for liberty, rather than give up now before you die? Because, you see, that's a kind of a death. To live as a slave for the next 50, 60, 70 years is nothing compared to living free. So we hope you all have a happy Easter. We'll see you two Sundays from today. Don't despair. Look up to the sky. Look up at the stars and stripes. Look back at the history of the men you stand on whose shoulders you stand, and realize that tomorrow is bright, the sun will shine, and it's a good day to take a knee and then get up and stand proud and fight for the freedom that you've inherited. This is Rex and Trog signing off.
The thunder of liberty rumbles on.
Out of their mind at Washington. The biggest divide we've got in this country, it's not between Democrats and Republicans. It is between entrenched politicians in both parties in Washington and the American people. And all across this country, people are frustrated going, what is wrong with them? They get elected, they go to Washington, and they stop listening to us. They stop listening. The top priority of the American people is jobs and economic growth. And in the year and a half I've been in Harry Reid's Senate, we haven't spent even a minute talking about jobs and economic growth. It simply isn't a priority. We haven't talked about fundamental tax reform. And I'll tell you the most important tax reform, we should abolish the IRS. For 5 years, we have been trapped in the great stagnation under President Obama. His policies are not working. And, you know, the rich and powerful, those who walk the corridors of power, are getting fat and happy under the Obama economic agenda. The top 1%, the millionaires and billionaires the president loves to demagogue, they earn a higher share of our national income than any year since 1928.
That the best thing conservatives can do is, well, nothing. That is, that our strategy should be simply to sit on our hands, to keep our heads down, and let President Obama's failures preserve a Republican majority in the House and win one in the Senate. But I'm here to tell you that conventional wisdom in Washington, as usual, is dead wrong. That council is unworthy of the party of Lincoln and Reagan, and it's unequal to the task before us. President Obama and the Democrats have done everything they can to deserve defeat. But the Republican Party has not yet done what it must do to deserve victory. We've not yet... Thank you. We've not yet won back the trust of the American people or explained exactly why they should give it to us. 2014 must be the year we change that. Most of the speakers you'll hear this week will come to inspire you or flatter you or claim solidarity with you. I've come to challenge you. The work remaining before us this year and for the next 3 years is the most important work conservatives have faced in a generation. It is the work of redefining our movement, of redefining and rebuilding our party, and rescuing our nation. That work will not be easy or fun or glamorous. Most of it won't even be noticed, but it is essential to our success. If conservatives do not do this work, we will lose. We'll lose in 2014 and in 2016 and beyond. We will lose and we will deserve to lose. And whether the people at this podium are willing to do that work depends on whether the people in this audience and conservatives in communities around the country demand it. The last time conservatives faced this challenge was 37 years ago at the 4th annual CPAC conference. It was February 1977, and that winter, Ronald Reagan and his conservatives were being attacked by the Washington Republican establishment for challenging President Ford in the 1976 primaries. They were being blamed for handing a victory to Jimmy Carter and other Democrats, but Reagan knew that it was the party establishment that had lost that election by losing touch and losing credibility. He knew that the future of the GOP was not the old party of Republican insiders. It was a new party of conservative ideas. And so Ronald Reagan came to CPAC, and he called for a new Republican Party, a party of principles and confidence and a positive agenda for change.
If we want to grow our movement, it's got to have new people. We can't be the party of the plutocrats and the rich people. I got involved with the Tea Party movement because I thought the bank bailouts were a horrible idea. That I was a middle-class guy working, I didn't feel like sending my money to a guy who made $100 million a year working on Wall Street, ran his bank or her bank into the ground, and somehow me in middle America, in what they call flyover America, I'm supposed to just send my money in to bail out these bankers? That was part of why the Tea Party started, was they were frustrated with Republicans. Many times, we've given up on the Democrats, but we were frustrated with Republicans voting for this bank bailout. That's the kind of message. There's always more of a working class, a bigger working class than an owner's class. I'm not against the owner's class, but I want to tell the workers of America that we're on their side. The president keeps offering you free stuff, but you're still in poverty. You're not getting any better. More unemployment insurance. Frankly, I think they'd rather have a job. When is the last time in our country we created millions of jobs? It was under Ronald Reagan. What did Ronald Reagan do? Did he come forward and say, oh, let's just cut taxes for low-income people? No, he said forthrightly, let's cut everyone's taxes. He did dramatically. The top rate, that's what rich people pay. The top rate was 70%. He lowered it to 50%. Then he lowered it again to 28%, and 20 million jobs were created. More revenue came in fact. When you cut rates, people work harder. They make more money. More revenue comes in. But we have to get beyond. We can't let the Democrats say, oh, well, if you lower the taxes for rich people, you're just for rich people. Anybody in here ever worked for a poor person? We are all interconnected. We got to get beyond all this class warfare. But we can't let them beat us up on it because we need to point back and say, how many people have your policies gotten out of poverty? None. How many people have their policies employed? None. We're in a terrible recession. We're still barely growing, if growing at all. You get free stuff, but you never get out of poverty. Your prices rise because big government steals the value of your dollar. So all of a sudden you got a little bit more and you get more benefits, but your groceries cost more and your gas costs more and you can't go on vacation. All of this occurs from big government. $17 trillion worth of debt is dragging us down. Many economists say that we're losing 1 million jobs a year because of the burden of this debt. We are on a precipice. I said in the beginning, the time approaches. I don't know when it's coming, but the time approaches. Does anybody remember 2008? I remember seeing patients in my office and coming through and looking at my retirement account and saying, oh my goodness, sell, sell, sell. And then I remember looking at my money market account. My definition of panic is when you're worried about your money market account losing its value. I am still worried that the fundamentals of that exist. Our movement has never been about the plutocrats. Our movement has never been about special privilege. But the other side paints it as that. Our job as we move forward is to let the media know bigger. That message resonates with young people. I took that message to the Conservative Political Action Committee, and I took it to Berkeley. Young kids on the right and young kids on the left, this message resonates. It's not that young people don't like our message of low taxes and less regulation and balanced budgets. They just don't have any money. They have debt. And they're trying to get a job that doesn't pay very well. So you have to talk to people about things they're concerned with. So instead of listening to the poobahs that supposedly are in charge of the party that want to dilute the message, we keep our core message. We're more bold with that message, but then we branch out and take other parts of the Bill of Rights that we all support and take it to people where they are. If we do, we will be the dominant party again. We've got to do it with a smile. We've got to do it with optimism. There's a painter by the name of Robert Henrime, and he wrote, paint like a man coming over the hill singing. And I love the image of that. We need to proclaim our message with the passion of Patrick Henry, like a man coming over the hill singing, with optimism, and make sure that it's a message for all, no matter what walk of life you are. But when we once again proclaim our message like a man coming over the hill singing,
you who are truly practitioners of free enterprise, about the whole problem of the marketplace and government as an institution, government's relationship to it. Now, I know that all business and industry in America are in the deepest trouble they've ever been in our entire national history. And I'm speaking not only of the obvious difficulties of the present economic dislocation and the capital shortage brought about by excessive government spending, but the wave of contempt and almost hatred, born of ignorance, that is abroad in the land toward this system we call capitalism. It is a system spark-plugged by the hope of economic reward that has taken the burdens off the backs of more people than any other system the world has ever known. And yet today, every economic and social ill in our society are blamed on the pursuit of profit. Some would curtail private property rights in the name of environmental protection. Those proclaiming consumerism declare that the very word profit is synonymous with evil. And they've all forgotten the very simple truth that profit, property, and freedom are inseparable, and you cannot possibly have the third without the first two. I stood backstage. I heard the wonderful presentation out here from the back of the screen. Looking through it, I could see the slides of this country of ours, and I had to think. It's very easy to sound extremely critical and downbeat when you are talking about the subject of this kind. But then I remember the words of Abraham Lincoln, who said it is possible to love your country and still disapprove of the policies of its government and those entrusted with those policies. Of late, we've neglected to teach economics in our schools, and a whole generation of our sons and daughters are growing up with little understanding of how this institution works. And if this lack of understanding is not soon corrected, We may do ourselves irretrievable harm by demanding even more interference from government than we already have. And I think we should be aware that when government involves itself in things that are not government's proper province, it is something less than a howling success. Now, we could read an example in one of those socialist countries in Eastern Europe where bureaucracy has grown up and government has taken full charge. And what happens when government has to solve the problems by itself? They were faced with a simple holiday problem. And they issued an edict that because Christmas Eve falls on Thursday, Thursday has been designated a Saturday for work purposes. The factories will be closed all day, but the stores open a half a day only. Now, that doesn't sound bad if they stop there. But that's the trouble with bureaucracy. It doesn't stop. So they went on. Friday has been designated a Sunday with both factories and stores closed all day. Monday will be a Wednesday for work purposes. Wednesday will be a business Friday. Saturday will be Sunday, and Sunday will be Monday. I don't know whether they ever did get back on the regular calendar again. But, of course, that's one of those Iron Curtain countries. We wouldn't do anything like that. Not here, free America. Let me read you a few lines from the Internal Revenue Code that are designed to make it easier for you to figure out your income tax every April. Section 509. For purposes of paragraph 3, an organization described in paragraph 2 shall be deemed to include an organization described in section 501C, subparagraphs 4, 5, and 6, which would be described in paragraph 2 if it were an organization described in paragraph 3. We live in the only country in the world where it takes more brains to figure out the tax than it does to earn the income. But would it surprise you to know that in this land of the free, business is more regulated today than in any country in the world where free enterprise is still allowed to exist in any form? We've played fast and loose with a system that released for the first time virtually in all man's history the individual genius of man to perform such miracles of invention, construction, and production as had never been seen. We had in our early years and until the last few decades limited government and the ultimate in individual freedom consistent with an orderly society. One half of the economic activity in the entire history of mankind has taken place in these 200 years in this country. But someplace along the line, we seem to have lost faith in the system and in ourselves. On every hand, people who should know better, people in positions of leadership and influence, advocate more government and less freedom as the solution to our problems. And very soon, if we're not careful, we'll have a country where everything that isn't prohibited is compulsory. Organized labor exerts a force on government that wouldn't be tolerated for 1 minute if it were attempted by management. Demands statutes to enforce privileges that they should be seeking from management at the free and open negotiating table. But management, too, has been guilty of turning to government for answers it might better provide for itself. It supported and obtained legislation which all too often interferes with the free rhythm of the marketplace and lessens competition. And government has loved every minute of it. Because government has, as history has shown, a built-in ability to grow, always to grow, never to voluntarily reduce itself.